This is Audible.
You're listening to the audio production of A January Bride by Deborah Rainey, published by Zondervan and read by Christy Ragland.
Chapter 1. Glancing at the chaos around her, Madeline Hauser set her coffee mug on the dining room table and shoved another packing carton out of her path. It didn't budge. She bent over and attempted to read the smudged label. Kitchen. Good china. Oh. Good thing she'd resisted the temptation to kick the box. Maddie looked into the kitchen where cupboards gaped open, hinges naked. The cabinet doors were lined up against the wall in the empty breakfast nook. Even after 4 days, the smell of wet enamel stung her nostrils. The flooring couldn't be laid until the electrician fixed the mess he'd made of the wiring, and she didn't dare put her china in the cupboards until all that was finished. What had her sister gotten her into? Kate's husband had been transferred to Ohio, but with their mother in the nursing home here in Claiborne, Kate had begged her to leave her beloved New York loft and move into Kate and Jed's house on Harper Street while it was being refurbished to sell. "You can write anywhere, Maddie," Kate had pled in her best big sister voice. "Besides, you can sublet the loft and just think what you'll save on the rent." So here she was in Claiborne, Kansas, the middle of nowhere, proving quite soundly that one could not write just anywhere. Lugging the carton of china out of the way, she wove her way through the maze of boxes and poured another cup of coffee. She blew a long strand of dishwater blonde hair out of her eyes and slid into a dining room chair. In the midst of the piles of books and boxes and unsorted mail strewn across the table, her laptop computer glared accusingly at her. Ignoring the disorder, she pulled the computer close, pushed her glasses up on her nose, and tried to remember where she'd left off. Ah, yes. The heartless landlord had just evicted the young widow. Oh, Brother Hauser, how cliché can you get? Well, too bad. She didn't have time to change the whole plot now. She'd managed to write almost 2,000 words this morning, but given her track record lately, she'd be lucky if 50 of them were worth keeping. What had she been thinking to let her editor talk her into a January 1 deadline in the midst of this cross-country move? It was nearly October. "You can do it, Madeline," Janice had crooned in her conniving editor's voice. "If we can get this book on the shelves before next Christmas, the first print run will sell out in a month. Come on, say you'll do it. Hauser fans are clamoring for your next book." Over the 6 years Janice Hudson had been Maddie's editor, they'd become dear friends. But right now, Maddie wanted to strangle her. She edited the sentence in front of the blinking cursor and forced herself to return to the 19th century and the plight of Anne Carraway, her suffering heroine. Poor Anne. She'd lost her beloved William and had been evicted from her home, alone with a small child to care for. Now Maddie was about to throw Anne Carraway onto the mean streets of Chicago. It was the bane of an author's existence, this need to make her beloved characters suffer, to put them in the furnace and turn up the fire. But without conflict, there was no story, and conflict often equaled sorrow. So on to the streets Anne Carraway and little Charlie must go. She typed furiously. The faint echo of dripping water pierced her concentration. She glanced up from her laptop and tilted her head, listening. Was it raining? Who could tell with the heavy drapes covering the room's high windows? Those would have to go. But first, she must finish this book. Brushing off the temptation to get up and check outside, she turned back to the keyboard. She typed 20 words before the drip, drip, drip became demanding. She pushed her chair back and navigated the labyrinth of cardboard boxes. The sound seemed to be coming from the kitchen, but nothing was leaking there as far as she could tell. Dodging sawhorses the contractors had left, she crossed to the basement door. As a rule, basements gave her the creeps. But in this tornado alley on the Kansas prairie, it was a rare house that didn't have one. She'd been relieved to find Kate and Jed's charming tutor had only a closet-sized cellar. Just enough space to provide refuge from a cyclone, but not enough to have dank corners where whatever it was she was afraid of could hide. She opened the door and gasped. The wooden treads at the bottom of the flight glistened with moisture, and from the far end of the cellar she could hear the unmistakable sound of water trickling into more water. A naked light bulb hung over the stairs. Rats! The string attached to the pull chain was caught on one of the splintered rafters overhead. Maddie straddled the steps, one foot on the top landing, the other on the thin ledge that ran the length of the stairwell. Grabbing the door handle for support, she scooted along the ledge, grasping blindly for the string. Next thing she knew, she was teetering on the ledge. She reached for something to steady herself. Unfortunately, what she found was the door, which slammed shut behind her. The stairwell went dark. Miraculously, she found the string with the next random swing of her arm. Not so miraculously, when she pulled on the chain, the light flickered, then sparked. She heard the ominous sound of every electric device in the house powering down. Had she remembered to save her manuscript? The old laptop barely held a charge anymore. It would be dead before the autosave kicked in. She felt herself slipping and gasped when she hit the stairs. hard. A sharp pain sliced through her left ankle, and she bumped down half the flight of stairs. When the stairwell quit spinning, she crawled back up to the kitchen and pulled herself to her feet, testing. Ouch! Her ankle had already swollen to the size of a small grapefruit. Damp and aching, she hobbled to the cordless phone on the kitchen wall. Dead. And her cell phone was upstairs in the guest room, charging. Thankfully, the landline in the dining room had a dial tone. She rummaged through the desk drawer until she found the thin phone book and flipped to the number of her neighbor, Ginny Ross. Ginny answered on the second ring. Ginny? Hi, it's Madeline Hauser next door. Is your electricity out? No. Well, at least I don't believe so. Just a minute. Maddie heard an oven door creak open and then what sounded like the ding of a microwave. No. Everything's still on over here. Rats. I think I've blown another fuse. And there's water in the... Ouch! Madeline? What's happened? Are you all right? Maddie cringed as she eased into the desk chair. I'm fine. I fell down the stairs and sprained my ankle. You scared me. I thought you'd electrocuted yourself. Maddie gave a humorless laugh. Nothing so dramatic, I'm afraid. Sorry to bother you. I just didn't want to call the electrician again if it was only... I'll be right over. The phone went dead, and Maddie sat staring at the receiver for a few seconds, until she realized Ginny meant her words literally. Maddie had met her neighbor only 2 weeks ago, but already she'd grown to love the woman. At 84 and widowed for a quarter of a century, Ginny epitomized the word spry. She was as independent as any of Maddie's 30-something New York friends. With her own mother's mind ravaged by Alzheimer's disease, it was good to have a wise older woman to talk to. Yoo-hoo! Ginny's cheery voice floated in from the mudroom. Come on in, Ginny. But watch your step. Ginny bustled into the kitchen, weaving her way through sawhorses and stepladders. Now what did you do to yourself? She bent to inspect Maddie's swollen ankle. Oh my! Are you sure it's not broken? I don't think so. She rubbed the tender area around the swelling. Ginny scooted another chair close and helped Maddie elevate her foot. Then she went to the freezer and rummaged inside until she unearthed a package of frozen peas. Here we go. She wrapped the icy bag in a dishcloth and draped it over Maddie's ankle. She glanced around the kitchen, taking in the renovation chaos. How are you ever going to finish that book in this mess? Maddie couldn't help it. Tears that had been pent up for weeks overflowed. Oh, Ginny, I'm already so far behind, I can't imagine how I'll make my deadline. And without electricity, I'm sunk. Well, of course you are. Ginny made sympathetic clucking noises with her tongue and surveyed the kitchen again. This will never do. I'd offer to let you write at my house, but I'm afraid my beginning piano students would make this wreck seem like a haven of peace. Maddie swiped at a tear and forced a smile. I appreciate that, Ginny, but it's not your problem. I'll figure something out. Maybe I can just go to the library. Are you kidding? You'd have a constant stream of onlookers gawking and pestering you with questions. Ginny snapped her fingers and turned to Maddie with a triumphant gleam in her eyes. I know just the place. My friend Arthur Tyler has that monstrous house sitting empty ever since his Annabeth died. They had a booming bed and breakfast until Annabeth got so bad. Arthur rarely has guests at the inn now, so I know he wouldn't mind if you went there to write. You probably wouldn't want to stay overnight, but you could use one of the rooms for an office. Arthur is a professor at the university. Keeps saying he's going to retire, but he never does. Maddie hesitated. Where is this place, Ginny? She felt awkward about the whole idea, but she had to do something. She sure wasn't going to get her book finished here. It's just a couple miles east of town. Out on Hampton Road. Pretty little place. Peaceful. Annabeth's parents ran the inn for years. Named it after her, of course. Grover and I stayed there for our 40th anniversary. Seemed kind of silly to stay overnight 2 miles from home. But it was nice. Kind of romantic. A faraway look came to Ginny's eyes, and an ever so faint blush touched her powdered cheeks. Let me give Arthur a call. You just get the plumber and electrician here. I'll take care of everything else. Chapter 2. Maddie stood in the doorway of the inn and inhaled. Sunlight splashed saffron patches on the shiny wood floors and caused the jewel tones in the window coverings and upholstery to glow. In spite of her injured ankle, she felt better already, standing in the spacious parlor and looking into tidy rooms free of packing crates. Arthur said to make yourself at home. Ginny dropped a keyring into the pocket of her bulky sweater and ran a hand over the oak mantel. Her fingertips left a trail in the film of dust. She cluck-clucked and shook her gray head. Annabeth always kept this place spotless, even after she got so sick. Poor Arthur. Was Annabeth a friend of yours? She was. A dear friend. She and Arthur both. It was a terrible thing, her dying. Ginny lifted a heavy pewter candlestick and wiped the dust away with the sleeve of her sweater. I'm so sorry. Ginny nodded, then gave a resolute bob of her chin and brightened. I'd show you the rest of the house, but I don't think your ankle would appreciate that steep staircase yet. Arthur said you could set up shop in one of the guest rooms. He lives in the apartment on the lower level. Doesn't use any of the house proper. So I'm sure you'd be welcome to use the main living area here if you prefer. Or you could hole up in this bedroom. Ginny opened the wide French doors off the living room to reveal a guest room beautifully decorated with dark, old English antiques. It's the only guest room on the main floor. And, by the way, the only bathroom on the first floor is in here. Maddie poked her head into the room and took in the modern pedestal sink on the far wall just outside a door that apparently concealed the bath. Ginny pulled the doors closed and led the way through a wide, arched doorway into the dining room. To the left, an open staircase led down to the apartment where the proprietor lived, Maddie presumed. The steep stairway was defended by an oak railing, and in the middle of the dining room sat a huge, round, antique oak table on an oriental rug. The walls wore old-fashioned wallpaper in shades of plum and burnished gold. A fine antique buffet held a silver tea service and baskets of teas and jams. Beyond that, an open doorway led to a small galley kitchen, where an array of dishes and baskets and jars of canned goods were displayed on open shelving. "You're sure Mr. Tyler won't care if I set up right here?" Maddie tipped her head toward the dining room table. "I'd say this is perfect," Ginny said, obviously pleased with herself. "I'll leave now so you can get to work." "Oh, Ginny, it is perfect. How can I ever thank you?" Ginny winked. "Just finish that book, sweetie. I've only about 3 chapters before I finish my last Hauser novel, and then I'm fresh out of reading material." Ginny bustled out the front door, and Maddie was left in the blessed quiet of the old house. She took her laptop from its case and set it on the table, positioning her chair for a lovely view through the arched doorway all the way to the front hall. She connected the power adapter and plugged it in. When she was satisfied with the arrangement, she unpacked her sack lunch and hobbled into the kitchen to put it away. The refrigerator shelves were empty, save for a few cans of soda and a package of ground coffee. Maddie put her lunch on the middle shelf, feeling strangely as though she were trespassing. But Ginny had said Arthur Tyler insisted she have free run of the place, including full use of the kitchen. She dumped the dark sludge from the coffee maker's carafe and found fresh filters in a drawer under the counter. Once the coffee was brewing, Maddie went back to the dining room to finish setting up shop. She unloaded her bag, placing her dictionary and several reference books to her left, notebook and pen to her right. She popped a Mozart CD into her computer. Classical music filled the room, and Maddie sighed as she sank into the brocade padded chair, slipped off her shoes, and propped her swollen ankle on the seat of a neighboring chair. The timeless melody, the rich aroma of fresh coffee, and her Victorian surroundings transported her back in time. And when she put her fingers to the keyboard, the words flowed as they hadn't in months. "I don't know you, Arthur Tyler, but God bless your generous old heart." For the next 2 hours, Maddie typed, getting up only to refill her coffee mug. Her plot was moving along nicely when a polite meow made her look up from her computer. A monstrous gray and white cat stuck its head through the stairway balusters and peered at her. Coming up the last steps, the cat sashayed over to Maddie, arched its back, and rubbed against her ankle before plopping down on her right foot. Maddie took off her glasses and laid them on the table. "Well, hello there, kitty." She reached down to stroke the leonine head. "They didn't tell me about you." The cat purred in response and nestled closer to Maddie. Though the house didn't have the chill she'd expected of a high-ceilinged Victorian, the cat's warmth was welcome. The old schoolhouse clock on the wall over the stairwell ticked a reassuring cadence, and she wrote for another hour while the cat napped. The clock's muffled chime and the growl of her own stomach brought Maddie out of Anne Carraway's world and back to the present. Wiggling her toes and lowering her left foot from its elevated position on the other chair, she nudged the cat. "Sorry, kitty, but I need to get up and stretch a bit." The cat yawned, bowed his back, and gave a short, friendly mew before following her into the kitchen. Maddie took her lunch from the refrigerator and ate it, leaning against the kitchen counter, her mind still on her story. Though her ankle throbbed, it felt good to stand up and flex her muscles a bit. After she finished her sandwich, she filled the sink with warm, sudsy water and washed the dishes, putting them to drain on the old-fashioned wire dish rack. She'd forgotten how nice it was to be in an operational kitchen, and she spent a few extra minutes tidying the kitchen before she went back to her computer. Her feline friend had disappeared. The clock chimed the half hour, and she looked up, surprised to find it was 2:30 already. Checking her word count, she was thrilled to discover she'd written almost 3,000 words. A few more days like this, and she might actually believe she could make her deadline. She saved the file, closed her laptop, and began gathering her belongings. Before she left, she scratched out a note for the inn's owner. "Dear Mr. Tyler, thank you so much for allowing me to work from your lovely home. It was such a peaceful day, and I accomplished more than I'd hoped. I so appreciate your generosity, And if you're certain it's not too much of an inconvenience, I'll plan to come back tomorrow. Madeline Hauser. P.S. Your cat was a wonderful companion. He kept my feet toasty warm while I worked. What is his name? He is a he, isn't he? The following morning, the plumber and the electrician arrived on the doorstep at 8 o'clock sharp. Maddie left them instructions, then hauled her laptop and research books out to her Mazda and drove the 8 blocks to the nursing home to check in on her mother before heading to the inn. A nurse at the front desk greeted her when she came in. You're Mildred Hauser's daughter, aren't you? Maddie nodded. How's she doing this morning? About the same, I guess. The nurse gave her a look that spoke volumes. With a heavy heart, Maddie trudged down the hall. Her mother was slumped in a chair in her room, staring out the window with that vacant look Maddie had come to despise. It struck her that at 68, her mother looked older and far more frail than Ginny Ross did at 84. She took a thin hand in hers. Good morning, Mom. No response. Your hands are cold. Do you want your sweater? Without looking at Maddie, her mother stretched out her arm and with bird-like motions, brushed at something invisible on the windowsill. It's a beautiful day, Mom. September's almost over. Maybe we can go for a walk when I come back this evening. She might as well have talked to the wall. Sighing, she went to the closet and picked out a lightweight sweater. As she started to close the sliding door, she noticed something leaning against a far corner of the closet. Several old canes she and Kate had bought for their mother when Mom first started losing her balance. On impulse, Maddie chose one of the canes and tested it. It did ease the pressure on her ankle. I'm going to borrow this for a couple days, Mom, okay? No reply. She closed the closet door and went to drape the sweater over her mother's shoulders. She patted Mom's frail hand. I need to run, but I'll check in on you before dinner tonight, okay? Her mother turned slowly from the window and looked from the cane to Maddie's face. For one brief moment, Maddie thought she saw a spark of recognition in the rheumy eyes. But as quickly as it had come, it was gone, and Maddie was left with a familiar dull ache in her heart. Oh, Mom, I miss you so much. Maddie arrived at the inn before 9 o'clock. She hadn't noticed before what a beautiful setting the charming house occupied. With a shelter belt of Osage orange trees to the east and a stand of cottonwoods far to the south, the three-story house stood sentinel on the Kansas plains. A late September cool spell had left the trees and shrubs tinged with a hint of the autumn to come, but pink and peach-colored roses were still in bloom, climbing the trellis by the front porch. Maddie got out of her car and breathed in the country air. Attempting to use her mother's cane, she slung her computer bag and purse over one shoulder and tucked the sack lunch she'd brought under her arm. She hobbled up the steps to the wide wraparound porch, found the key in the mailbox beside the door, and let herself in. On the dining room table was a message penned in a tidy masculine script on the back of the note she'd written the day before. Dear Miss Hauser, I'm delighted you enjoyed the time you spent here yesterday. I apologize for the dust and cobwebs. The inn has been a bit neglected since my wife's death, but I'm glad you were able to make use of it. Please do continue to come for as long as you like. And thank you for washing up the dishes. I'm sorry to have left the kitchen in such a mess. I rarely have guests at the inn during the week, but I did have someone drop in Tuesday night and didn't get a chance to clean up before I left to teach my 8 o'clock class. I shall try to do better in the future. Arthur Tyler. P.S. The cat's name is Alex, and yes, he is a he. I hope he hasn't been a pest. As you probably discovered, he has no claws, so is banned from the great outdoors. But please feel free to shoo him downstairs if he becomes a pest. Ginny tells me you have a horrendous deadline, and I'd hate to be responsible, even by proxy, for you not meeting it. And I confess I haven't read any of your writing yet, but if Ginny has her way, that shall be remedied very quickly. Tucking the note into her computer bag, Maddie smiled. What a charming old gentleman Ginny's friend was. Ginny had said Arthur Tyler was retired but still taught English at one of the colleges in Wichita. She wondered if his lengthy missive was due to the English professor in him or merely to loneliness. A little of both, she suspected. She set up her laptop and started a pot of coffee. While it brewed, she tidied up the kitchen. She found a dust cloth and furniture polish under the sink and polished the dining room table and buffet. She hated cleaning her own house, but it was different here. Besides, it was the least she could do if the proprietor wouldn't let her pay for the time she was spending here. When the luscious aroma of Irish Cream Cafe reached her nostrils, Maddie filled a large mug and placed it beside her laptop. But before she opened the computer file that contained her novel, she penned another note to Mr. Tyler. Dear Mr. Tyler, Alex is not a pest at all. I've thoroughly enjoyed his company. I had a cat once myself when I was a little girl. But since I began writing, I haven't had time to take care of one. Please don't think another minute about the dust and cobwebs. I didn't even notice. She read the last line again. Not exactly the truth. She scratched out a word and changed the sentence to read, I barely even noticed. She signed the note, then put her fingers on the keyboard and delved happily into Anne Carraway's world. Chapter 3. Arthur Tyler pulled into the driveway with a weary sigh. The cheerful-looking sign in front of the house read, "Welcome to Annabeth's Inn," but it would never again feel like a welcoming place to him, not without his Annie. If this was what 39 felt like, Art couldn't imagine living to be as old as his friend Ginny. Ginny Ross had been Annie's friend first, but as the cancer had sucked away Annabeth's young life, the older woman had taken Art under her wing. As if she and Annie were co-conspirators, Ginny's friendship had gradually been transferred to him. It was Annie's last gift to him, and he was grateful. Annie had been gone for 2.5 years now. Sometimes it seemed forever, and Art struggled to remember how the music of her voice had sounded, how her skin had felt beneath his touch. Other times it seemed as though she would come bounding up the stairs any minute, wearing her pixie smile and the shimmer in her eyes that spoke of how much she loved him. He parked outside the garage, slammed the door of his pickup, and walked back down the drive to the mailbox. The first day of October had blown in on a chill wind, and he turned up the collar of his overcoat. He pulled down the arched door of the mailbox. Junk. A couple of Christmas catalogs and a gas bill, which would be outrageously high. Even higher next month, now that he was leaving the heat on during the day for Ginny's writer friend. But what did he care? He had nothing else to spend his money on. "Be still, and know that I am God." The words floated through his brain, scolding him for his attitude. "Sorry, Lord," he whispered, his footsteps crunching on the gravel drive. He walked around the house and turned the key in the side door that led to his basement apartment. He stepped into the empty foyer. A thump, thump, thump on the steps brought a slight smile to his face. Alex. Another gift from Annie. He'd hated cats. Or thought he did. Until Annie had coaxed this mangy stray off the highway and into his heart. Now Alex greeted him with a comical cross between a purr and a meow, arched his back and rubbed up tight against Art's pant leg. Art stooped to scratch the cat under his chin. "Hey, Alex. What's for supper?" He put the mail on the bar in the kitchenette and hung up his coat in the bedroom closet. Alex trotted after him as he climbed the stairs to the inn to make sure Ginny's friend hadn't left the door unlocked or the coffee maker on. He was glad the woman was able to use the house as a getaway. It would have made Annie happy to think of having a real author staying in the house, writing here. Annie had read all of Madeline Hauser's books. Ginny had seen to that, giving her the most recent release each year for Christmas. He'd never paid much attention to them, leaning as he did toward the classics. He taught Tolstoy, Dostoevsky, Dickens, Jane Austen at the university. With passion. And he'd always teased Annie about the fluffy romance novels she read. He assumed that was what Madeline Hauser wrote, though it was beyond him how someone Ginny's age could even remember what romance was. A wry smile touched his lips. "Who are you to talk, Tyler? Do you remember?" Oh, but he did. That was the problem. He brushed away the memories as if they were cobwebs. As he came up the steps to the inn's dining room, his gaze landed on something under the table. He went to investigate and found a smooth wooden cane with an ornately carved handle. Apparently, the author had dropped it, and been unable to reach it beneath the table. Funny she hadn't mentioned it. He pictured the doddering woman trying to navigate his porch steps without her cane and shuddered. The last thing he needed was a lawsuit. But glancing around the room, he noticed the furniture gleamed in the afternoon sun. Madeline Hauser's dust rag had struck again. The woman had come to the inn 4 weekdays in a row now, and each day he came home to a tidier house than the day before. She must not be too infirm. On the table he spied a sheet of stationery filled with handwriting that was now familiar. They'd gotten in the habit of writing little notes back and forth concerning the details of their arrangement. Art had rather enjoyed their brief correspondence. Ha! What did it say about him that he received such pleasure exchanging notes with an old woman he'd never set eyes on? He picked up her note and read, "Dear Mr. Tyler, once again thank you for opening your home to me. The plumber finally got the water problem solved, but the electrical work is taking longer than expected, and the man who was to lay the flooring called this morning to say he's a week behind schedule with his other jobs. I'm so sorry. I certainly don't mean to burden you with my problems. I only mention them to explain why I continue to take advantage of your kind offer. Please, if this becomes a burden for you, I hope you'll say something. I could easily go to the library to write if this is not working out for you. Also, I don't mean to pry, but I noticed Alex seemed a bit listless this morning. I wondered if you'd noticed. I didn't see him at all this afternoon. I hope he's okay. I've grown quite fond of my little foot warmer. Thank you again. Madeline Hauser." Arthur set the note down and stooped to pick up Alex. "Are you feeling okay, buddy?" The cat looked perfectly healthy, purring away in his arms. Art gave the furry chin a good scratching. "Maybe Miss Hauser just doesn't realize how old you're getting to be." He put Alex on the floor and sat down at the table to reply to the note. Turning over Madeline Hauser's stationery, he wrote on the back, "Dear Miss Hauser, First of all, please do not apologize again. I am delighted to have you here, especially as it seems that every evening when I come home, one less dirty dish sits in the sink and one more piece of furniture is free of dust. Housekeeping services were certainly not part of the agreement we made, but I confess I don't want to complain too loudly. In all seriousness, I appreciate the tidying up you've done more than you can know. Second, please call me Art. I hear Mr. Tyler 100 times a day from my students, and though you and I have never met, I'd like to think we could be on a first-name basis by now. Third matter of business. As you've probably discovered, you forgot your cane here today. I found it under the table. I've left it for you in the kitchen. Hope you haven't missed it too much. And finally, as for Alex, I'll keep an eye on him. But I haven't noticed anything out of the ordinary. He's a bit of a couch potato, and like the rest of us, I suppose, he is getting along in years. But thank you for your concern. I'll tell him you asked after him. He smiled at his little joke, scrawled a happy face beside it, and signed his name. He hoped the old woman was getting as much enjoyment from their note-swapping as he was. His step a bit lighter, he went down to his apartment to fix a sandwich and grade the essays his advanced English students had turned in. Chapter 4. By the end of the following week, Maddie had settled into a comfortable routine. She consulted with the workmen before leaving the house, made a quick visit to the nursing home, and usually reached her makeshift desk in the inn's dining room by 9 a.m. On Friday morning, Maddie let the electrician in and headed out, loaded down with packages to mail. Miracle of miracles, she had 10 more chapters of her manuscript ready to ship off to Peggy Barton, the woman who proofread her first drafts. Her editors didn't expect her to turn in a perfect manuscript, but Maddie cringed at the thought of her professional editors seeing her rough first draft. She'd always hired someone to proof her work before she sent it off. Kate had asked Maddie to get some things out of storage, so she had those boxes ready to mail to her sister as well. She parked in front of the quaint post office and went around to the passenger side for the packages. Though she still favored her left leg a bit, her ankle was much better, and she'd returned her mother's cane the day after retrieving it from the inn. Piling the parcels in her arms, she gave the car door a shove with one hip and started up the sidewalk. As she approached the double doors of the quaint post office building, a dark-haired man exited and held the door open for her. "Thanks so much," she smiled at him over her tower of packages. "No problem." The smile he flashed in return did funny things to her insides. "Forget it, Hauser," she warned herself, catching the man's departing reflection in the glass. "He's probably married. Besides, you've given up on men, remember?" The man greeted another patron by name, then stopped on the sidewalk outside to talk to an elderly couple. Ah, small-town life. Claiborne was possibly one of the last towns in America without home delivery, so the post office was a social hub. She liked the fact that everybody seemed to know everybody else. In her New York neighborhood, no one bothered to exchange more than polite nods. She dropped off her packages, picked up 3 days' worth of mail, and drove out to Annabeth's Inn. After 2 weeks of riding there each day, pulling into the inn's driveway had begun to feel like home. She wasn't sure she'd be able to ride in the house on Harper Street once it was livable again, and she was beginning to wish she hadn't prayed so hard for the plumber and electrician to hurry. She carried her things into the house, then set up her laptop on the dining room table before going through her mail. A wedding invitation and 2 baby announcements. Great. It seemed all her friends back in New York were either getting married or having babies. At least being in Kansas gave her a good excuse to miss those celebrations that only served to remind her that she was alone. She pushed the thought away and quickly got the coffee pot going, a dust rag flying, while Mozart provided background music for it all. The smell of fresh coffee wafted into the front parlor where Maddie was cleaning, and her spirits lifted. She put away the dust rag, filled a large mug, and set to work on her novel. By the time the clock chimed 11:30, Maddie had almost 2,000 words to show for her diligence, along with a stiff spine. She saved the file to her computer and stood to stretch. Her gaze traveled down the hallway to the ornate staircase that led to the upstairs guest rooms. She'd been dying to explore the rest of the house, but had been afraid to try the stairs on her sprained ankle. Gingerly, she rotated her foot a few times and bent to rub it. The swelling was almost gone, the pain barely noticeable anymore. She'd dusted the entire first floor twice over the course of 2 weeks. Maybe it was time to see what kind of shape the second floor was in. Thickly carpeted steps creaked under her weight, and she felt unaccountably guilty, as if she were snooping. But Mr. Tyler had said she was free to use any room in the house, so surely he wouldn't mind if she took a look around. She was halfway up the stairs when the doorbell broke the silence and set Maddie's heart pounding. She crept back down the steps and peeked through the curtain at the windowed front door. Ginny Ross's Volkswagen sat in the driveway, and Ginny stood on the porch. Maddie opened the door, feeling like a child caught snooping under the Christmas tree. Ginny held out a white bag that bore the golden arches of McDonald's. I hope you haven't had lunch yet. I brought cheeseburgers. Bless your heart. Let's go eat. I hadn't thought about it till now, but I'm starved, and all I brought was peanut butter. I can't stay too long. You have work to do, and I have a piano student coming early. Maddie led the way to the dining room. She swept her books and papers to one side while Ginny opened the paper sack and took out two fat, wrapped burgers and a large order of fries. The savory scent filled Maddie's nostrils and made her stomach growl in protest. She went to the kitchen for paper napkins and glasses of ice water, gratefully tossing the dry sandwich from her lunch bag into the trash. Maddie joined Ginny at the table, and the older woman bowed her head and blessed their food, ending with, "And please help Madeline meet her deadline." "Thank you, Ginny," Maddie said, deeply touched. "So how is the book coming along?" "Very well, I think. It's sometimes hard for me to tell. I get too close to my work to be objective. But I do know that if it weren't for this wonderful writing retreat you found for me, I'd still be limping along." Ginny nodded. "Speaking of limping, your ankle seems to be better." "Much better, thank you. And your sister's house? Are they making progress?" "Slow, but sure," Maddie said over a mouthful of cheeseburger. She swallowed and wiped a spot of ketchup from the corner of her mouth. "To tell you the truth, Ginny, I'm almost dreading the day they finish." "Why ever would you say that?" "Because then I won't have an excuse to come to this lovely place anymore. There's just something special about this house." She sobered. "But I know I'm imposing on Mr. Tyler. I don't want to overstay my welcome."
"Nonsense," Ginny said. "You're as welcome as you can be. Why, just the other day Arthur was telling me how you've been doing the housekeeping. I think he's the one who's feeling guilty."
"It's nothing, really. I just do a little dusting or sweeping each morning while I'm waiting for the coffee to brew." "The way Arthur talks, it's a lot more than that. He wanted me to tell you that you are welcome to come for as many weeks as you need."
"Mr. Tyler sounds like the sweetest man. I wish I could meet him sometime. I'd like to thank him in person."
A strange twinkle came to Ginny's eyes.
"Well, maybe we can arrange that one of these days."
Watching her neighbor, it struck Maddie that perhaps there was more than mere friendship between Ginny Ross and Arthur Tyler. How delightful to think of the lively Ginny having a romance. She'd never given the love lives of octogenarians much thought, but knowing Ginny the way she'd come to, suddenly she could picture it quite clearly. And if Ginny, at 80-something, could find love again, maybe there was hope for Madeline Hauser somewhere down the road. She banished the thought as quickly as it had come. 5 years ago, after Rob Clevenger broke up with her, she'd decided once and for all that romance was much more trouble than it was worth. Unfortunately, Rob hadn't been the first to break her heart. It seemed marriage simply wasn't something God intended for her. She'd been blessed in many ways, with the warm relationship she had with her sister and her two nieces, with a successful career as a writer and opportunities to travel all over the world, and now with Ginny's friendship. No, she should be satisfied and fulfilled with those things. Besides, she had Mom to take care of now. She didn't have time for romance. "Don't you think so, Madeline?" Ginny's voice interrupted her thoughts. She had the decency to blush.
"I'm sorry, Ginny, my mind drifted."
"What was that?" Her neighbor leaned back and studied her for a moment. "I was just wondering if Arthur wouldn't be better off selling this house. The inn. I suppose it is an awful lot of work to keep the place up."
"Oh, it's not that. It's Annabeth. The memories must be thick here. They lived here their entire marriage, you know."
"No, I didn't know."
"Well, I, for one, think it's time he moved on. The man has a lot of good years left, and he's wasting them pining away for that woman.
She was a dear woman. A dear friend. But she's gone, and he needs to accept it." Maddie smiled to herself. She wondered if Ginny realized how transparent she was being. After Ginny left, Maddie pondered the things the older woman had said, and an idea began to take root. Perhaps if Maddie met Arthur Tyler, got to know him a bit, she could spur things along between him and Ginny Ross. If Mr. Tyler was as obtuse in the ways of romance as the men she'd dated, he probably didn't have a clue Ginny had feelings for him. Maybe there was the seed of a new novel in this. Her mind whirled with lovely possibilities that wove in and out of Anne Carraway's tale. She scarcely looked up from her computer until the distant buzz of a lawnmower broke her concentration. She pushed back her chair and went to look out the parlor window. A husky, spike-haired teen in a baggy sweatshirt pushed a lawnmower back and forth across the front lawn. Maddie remembered Mr. Tyler mentioning in one of his notes that a high school student would be working in the yard on Fridays. She went back to her keyboard and wrote steadily until the clock in the hallway chimed 4. She packed up her things and wrote a little note to Mr. Tyler. She still wasn't quite comfortable calling the old gentleman Art, as he'd requested. She opted for Arthur instead. "Dear Arthur, my thank yous surely fall on deaf ears by now." Goodness, she hoped the man wasn't hard of hearing. She hadn't meant that literally. Ah, well, he was an English professor. Surely he could decipher her intent. But I simply cannot leave this wonderful house each day until I've properly thanked my unseen host. Once again, I had a most productive day writing. Sometimes the peace and quiet here are so perfect I almost forget to take a break for lunch. Fortunately, our dear mutual friend remedied that today. Ginny Ross brought lunch out to the inn, and we had a wonderful visit. It made me realize I've been at my house so seldom over the past few days, I've missed the pleasure of having Ginny for a neighbor. I'm not sure I've ever met such a sweet, selfless woman. And so energetic. She runs circles around me. Maddie reread her note. She hoped her endorsement of Ginny wasn't too obvious. But then, could one ever be too obvious with men? With a wry smile, she picked up the pen again. Ginny says you've given permission for me to come back next week. If you're certain that's not an imposition, I will happily take you up on the offer. The workers have made some progress on my house, but it's all going much slower than I imagined. At any rate, with the solitude I've found here at your inn, I'm finally beginning to believe I might make my deadline on this book after all. Thank you again, kind sir. Have a nice weekend. Madeline Hauser. On the way home from the inn the following Monday, Maddie stopped by the post office to collect her mail. She'd had the mail from her New York apartment forwarded to Kansas, but it was slow in coming. Her mailbox had been depressingly empty recently. She bent and peered in the little windowed door. She had mail. She dug in her purse for the key. Her box yielded a bill from Mason Electric and a postcard saying she had mail too large for the box. She took the card to the counter and handed it to the clerk. The man went back into the bowels of the building and returned a minute later with a manuscript-sized envelope sent with next-day postage. What was this? Surely Peggy hadn't finished proofreading the last batch she'd sent already. She took the package out to the car and sliced it open with a nail file from her glove compartment. Inside was the portion of her manuscript she'd sent to Peggy, ominously absent of red ink. A brief note lay on top under the wide rubber band that held the pages together. So sorry to return this, Madeline, but I've taken a full-time job and will no longer be able to proofread for you. I tried to contact you before you mailed the manuscript, but I never got an answer at the number you gave me, and my emails aren't going through to you. I do hope this doesn't cause a problem. The implications of Peggy's note registered, and Maddie smacked the steering wheel with the flat of her hand. Electrical failures and water leaks and proofreaders quitting had conspired to keep her from turning this book in on time. She tossed the manuscript onto the pile of books and magazines in the passenger seat and put the key in the ignition. She really needed to go see her mother before she went home, but she wasn't sure she could handle one more depressing thing. Tears came suddenly, and she wiped at them with the back of her hand. Lord, I don't think I can take much more. Please, just help me to get... A tapping sound on her car window broke through her prayer. She gave a little gasp, grabbed a tissue from the box on the floor, and dipped her head to dab discreetly at her cheeks before turning to roll down the window. She didn't know the man bent beside her car, wearing an expression of deep concern. Wait, no, it was the handsome man who'd held the door for her at the post office last week. I'm sorry to bother you, but... He gave an apologetic smile. I couldn't help but notice you were upset. Is everything okay? Embarrassed as she was to have been caught crying, she was touched by the thoughtful gesture of the stranger. And a gorgeous stranger at that. Such intense blue eyes. He seemed familiar somehow. I'm okay. She forced a smile. I just got some bad news in the mail. Oh? I'm sorry. I hope it's nothing too serious. Oh, no. She shook her head and affected a chuckle. It's one of those things I'll probably laugh about in a few weeks, but right now it was just... too much. Thank you for asking, though. It was very thoughtful of you. She reached for the keys in the ignition, anxious to escape the man's sweet scrutiny. He shrugged and ducked his head. Sorry to have bothered you. I hope everything turns out okay. Don't worry. I'm sure it will. He held up a hand in farewell and hurried across the street. In her rearview mirror, she watched him climb into an old Chevy pickup. She shook her head in wonder at the friendliness of these Midwesterners. No wonder Kate and Jed had loved raising their girls here in Claiborne. Feeling oddly energized, Maddie drove to the nursing home and sat with her mother in the dining room while Mom picked at the bland food they served her. Her mother was quiet, but the vacant stare seemed less pronounced, and she even flashed Maddie a conspiratorial look of disgust when Mr. Bender slopped his coffee on the white linen tablecloth. Maddie headed for home, feeling hopeful again. When she unlocked the kitchen door and flipped on the light, she was delighted to see the cupboard doors back on their hinges and the floor cleaned off in preparation for laying the tile. Thank you, Lord. Maddie's whispered prayer echoed hollowly in the empty room. As she walked through the house, she stopped in the living room in front of the old upright piano her nieces had practiced on. She leaned over the keyboard and played a tentative chord. The piano was sadly out of tune, but she scooted the bench out and sat down. Her rusty fingers explored the keys and soon found a simple melody she'd learned as a child. She hadn't brought her piano or any of her music with her from New York. Not that she read music well, anyway. She mostly played by ear. Now she plinked out the song, enjoying the mindless activity. The piano had always been good therapy for her. Maddie played for half an hour, losing herself in the music. As her mind replayed the day, she smiled to herself, thinking of her neighbor's crush on Arthur Tyler, and scheming of ways to get Ginny Ross and the innkeeper together. But the handsome face of the kind stranger at the post office kept intruding on her scheming. Chapter 5. It was dark by the time Art finished his errands, and he stopped to grab a burger and fries to take home for supper. It had been a long day, and it was only Monday. He'd been telling himself for a year now that he was going to retire from his teaching job. The commute was getting old, and with winter coming, it would be worse. But if he did retire, what on earth would he do with his time? He could always start advertising the inn again, and get it running back at full capacity. But since Annie's death, he hadn't had the heart for it. Still, it would beat driving an hour each way to work every day. He actually enjoyed the maintenance and odd jobs of keeping the inn up. He even rather liked cooking simple breakfasts for weekend guests. It was the little touches he'd never been good with. Those had been Annie's department. Fresh flowers and scented candles, and clean linens on the beds in each room. Miss Hauser had inadvertently made it clear to him that he had no clue what it took to keep up with the simple housekeeping of the place. What a difference it had made simply to have the cobwebs swept away and the tabletops polished. If he had enough paying guests, he could hire someone to do those things. The truth was, he could afford to hire someone now. Even after setting college funds aside for Annie's nieces, the inheritance she'd received when her parents died had made it possible for him to retire whenever he wanted. But that was the trouble. He wasn't sure what he wanted. Life had lost its sunshine, its certainty, when Annie left his world. It had been a long time since he'd felt passionate about anything. His friend, Dave Sanders, had suggested more than once that perhaps a change of place would provide the impetus he needed to jumpstart his life. Maybe he did need to sell the inn and move away. But it was hard to imagine how leaving Claiborne, and his church and the people he and Annie had come to love, could make his life more fulfilling. He thought of Madeline Hauser. According to Ginny, the author had left her home in New York and moved to Kansas to be near her mother. If Art thought it would be difficult at his age, what must it be like for someone as, well, as settled as Miss Hauser must have been in her life? Maybe he'd ask her about it. Their correspondence had deepened over the weeks she'd been coming to the inn to write, and the back-and-forth notes provided a bright spot in his otherwise mundane days. Alex met him at the door, pawing at his legs, begging for a bit of hamburger. While Art and Alex shared supper, he tried to explain his dilemma in a note to the author. "Dear Miss Hauser, I have been contemplating something, and it struck me today that you might provide some insight on the topic. Quite frankly, I have felt rather stuck since the death of my wife. Though I can hardly picture it, friends have suggested it might be wise to sell the inn and move away from Claiborne and all the memories it holds for me. Since you've just made the kind of move my friends are advising, I wonder how you feel about their suggestion. I don't want to burden you with the task of giving a floundering soul advice, but if you have any quick thoughts on the subject, I'd certainly be more than grateful for the input. I trust the writing is still going well. Again, I deeply appreciate all the housekeeping you've done. The inn is wearing a much brighter face these days, and if there is anything I can do to make your stay here more comfortable or conducive to meeting your deadline, by all means, please let me know. Happy writing, Art." He reread his note and had to smile at the formal tone he affected whenever he wrote to Madeline Hauser. Quite different from the terse, hip notes he scribbled on his students' essays. Perhaps it was only natural to pander to the sensibilities of one's audience, but reading this brief note reminded him of the long letters he'd written to Grandmother Tyler after he'd gone off to college. He'd often asked his grandmother's advice, even sometimes when he'd already made up his mind about something. Like marrying Annie. It had been nice to have Grandmother confirm his decisions. On the rare occasion when Opal Tyler offered a dissenting opinion, Art had always given it careful consideration. His heart swelled at the memory. He left the note lying on the table in the dining room, where Miss Hauser would find it in the morning. It might be nice to meet Ginny's friend someday. Tell her how much Annie had enjoyed her books. Maybe he should read one of the woman's novels himself. According to Ginny, Madeline Hauser was quite well known in her genre. There might even be a marketing angle to it. Madeline Hauser wrote here, should he ever decide to advertise the inn again. Provided, of course, Miss Hauser didn't mind him dropping her name in his brochures. He doubted she would, though. Didn't most authors crave any publicity they could get? Maddie read the note again, already composing a reply in her mind. She thought it rather odd that Mr. Tyler would ask advice of her, but she was glad for an opportunity to offer the inn's owner her opinion. Rubbing her chin thoughtfully, she picked up her pen. Dear Arthur, first of all, if we're going to be on a first-name basis, it must be mutual. Please call me Madeline. I admit I feel a bit strange trying to offer you advice. Surely you are much wiser and more qualified than I to make such a decision. But I suppose I do have my own experience to share, and I'll try not to write a novel. Ha! Perhaps you'll find a nugget of help in hearing what I've gone through. I was perfectly happy living in New York, but my sister's husband was transferred out of state, and my mother lives at the nursing home here in Claiborne. My sister convinced me that I could write anywhere. Well, you know that story. At any rate, I made the move somewhat against my will and with an attitude that was less than Christian. For a while I let that attitude fester, and, as you can imagine, things only got worse. Once I finally started assuming God had a hand in this whole thing, I began to recognize many good things about the move. It caused me to step out of a box that had become a little too comfortable. Most of all, I'm happy to be near my mother during her final years. Even though Mom is in the latter stages of Alzheimer's and doesn't know me anymore, it's been a blessing to spend time with her. And then, of course, God put dear, dear Ginny in my life. But enough about me. Since I don't know you or the reasons your friends are recommending this move, it's hard for me to give advice. I don't know where you stand in terms of faith, but I do know that Ginny has a deep respect for you, so perhaps you'll understand my perspective on this. I believe if you seek God about this matter, He will guide you to the right decision. It may not seem right at first. It may be difficult and lonely for a while, as my adjustment has been. But I have lived long enough to know that God can take a noxious weed patch and turn it into a sweet-smelling rose garden. Maddie started to sign off, tickled she'd found a way to campaign for Ginny again. But suddenly an idea came to her. She wondered why she hadn't thought of this before. She picked up the pen. Since you felt free enough to ask for my input, might I take the liberty of asking for yours? Last week I received the unfortunate news that I've lost my proofreader. I understand you teach English, and I wonder if you might know of someone among your associates who would be willing to do that sort of work for me. I have a wonderful editor at my publishing house, but what I need is someone to give my manuscript a once-over, checking for simple typographical and grammatical errors, inconsistencies in the storyline, that sort of thing. It could even be a conscientious college student. If you know of someone who'd be willing to take on the task on rather short notice, I would be most appreciative. I have a January deadline that is beginning to terrify me. Of course, I would expect to pay the going rate for the service. I'll be thinking of you as you mull over the decision facing you. And thank you in advance for any help you can provide regarding a proofreader. Your friend, Madeline Hauser. Chapter 6. The following Monday, Art locked the door to his office at the university and walked out to his parking space. His cell phone lay on the dusty seat of the truck, displaying a message notification. Dustin. He put the key in the ignition and listened to the message. Dustin Brevitz, the high school kid who took care of the inn's lawn, was already overdue with the mowing. Now he'd gotten himself an after-school detention and was backing out on the responsibility again. Art punched the keypad and lobbed the phone onto the passenger seat. He had guests scheduled at the inn for Friday and Saturday nights. The recent rains and balmy weather had the grass growing as if it were summer again, and by the weekend it was going to look like a jungle. He sighed. He'd just have to mow it himself. Not that he really minded the job, but it got dark so early these days he usually watched the sunset on the drive home. Maybe he could rearrange some office appointments and get home early enough on Friday afternoon to at least mow the main lawns. The flowers would have to go without a much-needed deadheading. He could see why Ms. Hauser had been so frustrated over her lost proofreader. Nothing was more irritating than people who were not dependable. But Art slapped the ball of his hand to his forehead. He'd meant to post something on the job board in the English department about the proofreader job. Talk about unreliable. But wait a minute. He'd been wanting to read one of Ms. Hauser's novels anyway. Why didn't he offer to proofread it himself? Judging by her neatly penned notes, he doubted there would be much to mark on one of her manuscripts. Not to mention that he was beginning to feel rather guilty about the amount of housekeeping the woman was doing for him. He'd walked through the house last night and rejoiced at how spotless it was. He wouldn't have to do a thing to the main floor before the guests arrived. He would, however, need to clean the third-floor guest room they'd reserved. Ms. Hauser's cane undoubtedly had not allowed her to brave the steep stairway to the attic room. With one hand on the steering wheel and one eye on the traffic, he rummaged in his briefcase for a notepad and pen, then jotted down some cryptic reminders to himself. He pulled off of Hampton Road to the inn, just as a beautiful Kansas sunset splashed across the western horizon. He parked the pickup, jumped out, and walked back to the mailbox, marveling at shades of pink and turquoise and tangerine he'd never seen any artist reproduce successfully. Walking back to the entrance to his basement apartment, the crunch of gravel beneath his feet echoed in the still fall air. How could he ever leave this place? Dave was crazy. He threw his briefcase and jacket on the cluttered table and went to check out the upstairs. Alex met him at the top of the steps with his comical half-purr, half-meow greeting. The dining room table was empty. In the 3.5 weeks she'd been coming, Ms. Hauser had failed to leave a note only one other time. Art checked the kitchen. She'd been here all right. The clean coffee carafe, a soup bowl, and a cup and saucer were neatly stacked in the dish drainer. He was surprised at the wave of disappointment that swept over him at the absence of that note. Maybe Dave was right after all. Maybe he seriously needed to get a life. Alex pattered after him as he climbed the carpeted stairs to the second floor and opened the door to the narrow stairwell that led to the attic suite the weekend guests had requested. This had been his and Annie's room before the inn had become so successful. Later, they decided to finish the basement apartment and open the suite to guests. Art let his hand rest on the brass doorknob for a moment, steeling himself. It was still difficult to enter the space that held so many sweet, intimate memories. He flipped the light switch and climbed the steps. The air grew chill as he reached the top. He walked over to the antique dresser on the far wall. Fine dust coated the smooth oak surface, and the beveled mirror that hung over the dresser was dim with grime. He ducked under the low-hanging eaves and stepped into the modern bathroom, adjoining the room. A bulb was out on the Hollywood strip lighting that surrounded the mirror. The window that looked out over Milo Fields to the north of the house was open an inch, and the sill was littered with dead flies. A tiny spider scurried down the drain of the large whirlpool tub. He made a mental note to bring up some cleaning supplies and bug spray after supper. As he stepped back into the room and pulled the bathroom door shut behind him, his gaze fell on an oval frame, convex glass protecting the photograph inside. As much as he wanted to turn away, he was drawn to the picture like steel to a magnet. The sepia-toned image looked as authentic as the antique frame, just as Annie had intended. But the stoic couple standing side by side in the photograph was Art and Annie Tyler, circa 2001. It had been taken on their Colorado honeymoon at one of those Old West novelty portrait places in Durango. Annie had picked out their costumes, including the handlebar mustache Art sported in the portrait. Art ran his fingers over the glass, gently wiping the dust from the image. A lump came to his throat as he gazed through the glass into Annie's eyes. Though her expression was stern and posed, as the long exposure time of the old tin-type cameras necessitated, Annie's eyes held a distinct twinkle. He remembered the day as if it were yesterday, when he'd stepped from the dressing room wearing the western duds and the dark mustache that matched his hair. Annie had dissolved in hysterical giggles. The photographer had a hard time capturing the serious pose Annie desired, but Annie had proudly framed the resulting print and penned the accompanying label, Mr. and Mrs. Arthur Tyler, in her flowing calligraphy. Art shook his head to clear away the poignant memory. Come on, Alex. We've got work to do. Tail high, the cat followed him downstairs. Maddie stared at the note, not quite sure how she should respond. Arthur Tyler had offered to proofread her manuscript. It would be wonderful to have an English professor read for her, and especially helpful to get a male perspective on her story, even if that perspective did come from a generation or two before most of her readers were born. But how could she ask him for yet another favor? He'd already offered her so much. Still, she was desperate. Before she could change her mind, she picked up her pen and accepted his offer as gracefully as she knew how. Dear Arthur, I sincerely hope you aren't making your offer to proofread my manuscript out of some altruistic, chivalrous sense of duty. Though we've never met, I fear that is just the kind of thing you would do. Of course, I use the word fear in a contrary sense. How I wish there were more men in my generation who possessed such a quality. I would love to take you up on your offer under the following conditions. 1. You allow me to pay you a fair wage for your work. 2. You are brutally honest in your critique of my writing. You would do me no favors by being kind. 3. You feel free to drop the job at any time, for any reason, without explanation or guilt. I will leave the first 5 chapters of my manuscript here, and if you are agreeable to these points, then have at it. I know you must be weary of my gushing, but again, thank you so very much for all you've done to help me meet this deadline. You shall most definitely have a well-deserved mention in my acknowledgments page. Have a lovely evening. Madeline Hauser. That task out of the way, she plugged her computer in and set to work. She finished chapter 27, but found herself at a loss as to what should come next. Standing to stretch her cramped muscles, she walked from room to room on the main floor, barely noticing the now familiar and dear features of the house as she mulled over her story. No great insights came. She had learned not to panic when this happened, though it was hard not to when she was so close to her deadline. She paced the hallway that ran the length of the house, her sneakers making an annoying squeak with each step. As she came to the staircase in the foyer, she remembered that she'd never explored the second floor since the day Ginny had waylaid her with the enticement of cheeseburgers. Her novel temporarily forgotten, Maddie trotted up the stairs. Three doors off the main hallway at the top of the landing stood open, and Maddie walked first into a sitting room, part of a suite decorated in a Victorian motif, ruffled and elegant with a wonderful old porcelain clawfoot tub in the bathroom. The room adjacent to the suite was more austere, with its Art Deco oak furniture and wall coverings. She meandered slowly through each room and back again, lingering over the trinkets thoughtfully arranged atop the antique dressers and armoires. The rooms were much as she had imagined, fitting the style of the old Victorian home, yet with modern comforts seamlessly woven in. Obviously, a great deal of loving care and no small measure of creative talent had gone into the decorating of these rooms. Maddie actually grew excited, thinking of a whole new part of the house she could dust and polish. She would earn her keep yet. As she went back into the hallway to go downstairs, another door, this one closed, caught her eye. She tried the painted brass knob and was surprised when it swung outward, revealing a narrow, carpeted stairway. Feeling like a trespasser, she climbed the steps, relieved to discover that the room at the top was another cozy guest suite. Stooping to peer out the dormered window at the head of the stairway, she gave a little gasp. The window overlooked a patchwork of Kansas fields, and a row of ancient cottonwood trees stood against the backdrop of sky the color of sapphires. The majesty of New York City paled by comparison. Maddie knelt there for a long time, surprised again by how deeply this open sky and prairie landscape spoke to her spirit. Finally, she stood and explored the suite, delighted to find a low bookcase filled with her favorite authors. Her eyes widened as she spotted hardcover copies of her first four novels lined up on the bottom shelf. Ginny mentioned that Annabeth Tyler had been a fan. These must have been Mrs. Tyler's copies. The book jackets were in pristine condition, as though the books had never been read. But some people removed the jacket before they read a book. She crossed the room and peeked into the large modern bathroom, complete with whirlpool tub. Mr. Tyler must be expecting guests for the weekend, for the room sparkled. Every chrome fixture shone, and every wood surface glowed with a warm patina. The room still smelled of lemon oil and pine sol. Maddie had begun to wonder if the inn ever had guests anymore, but here was her answer. As she exited the bathroom, her gaze was drawn to an old portrait on the wall in front of her. A well-dressed young couple struck a staid pose, staring straight ahead. Maddie had seen similar photographs while researching her historical novels. It always fascinated her to see such ordinary, often oddly familiar faces staring back from the past, and this portrait was no exception. The convex glass encasing the photograph had the wavy quality typical of old glass, making it a bit difficult to see the portrait clearly. Still, the faces intrigued her, the glint of mischief so apparent in the woman's eyes, and the man reminded her of someone she knew. Or perhaps he was someone famous, someone she'd come across in her research once upon a time. Her fascination grew when she read the label at the bottom of the frame, Mr. and Mrs. Arthur Tyler. Judging by their formal clothing, this might have been their wedding portrait. What a handsome young man Arthur Tyler had been. She could almost picture what he might look like now, the black curls and mustache grown white, the smooth planes of his face tanned like leather, crinkled with laugh lines. She could hardly wait to meet the man in person to see if her conjectures were accurate. If so, she could certainly understand Ginny's infatuation. She cast about the room, hoping to discover a more recent portrait of the Tylers, but the only other frame in the suite held a faded silvered mirror. Maddie studied her reflection for a moment, sweeping her hair up off her neck and twisting it into a wispy chignon like the one Annabeth Tyler wore in the portrait. Glancing back at the portrait on the wall and the handsome figure the young Arthur Tyler cut, a strange ache of longing came over her. All the heroes in her novels were men of centuries long past, men of honor and integrity, gentlemen whose strength didn't depend on vulgarity and macho blustering. The only peers she'd met who had those qualities were spoken for. She let her hair fall limply to her shoulders and sighed. But as she descended the stairs, an idea flickered. She'd been looking for a face for Jonathan Barlow, the protagonist in her novel who would sweep her hapless heroine off her feet and into his heart. She had certainly found him. A smile pulled at the corners of her mouth, She wondered how Mr. Tyler would feel if she told him his portrait had provided a model for one of her characters. No, she didn't want to creep the man out. It must be her little secret for now. But she knew she would come up to this room each day to gaze into the eyes of her new hero before going back, inspired, to her computer. Ah, how she envied Anne Carraway. Chapter 7. Art thanked the postal clerk, slipped the new book of stamps into his shirt pocket, and started through the post office door, stuffing his wallet into his back pocket as he walked. He glanced up in time to hold the door for an attractive young woman who was, like him, preoccupied, stuffing her gloves and keys into her purse. They almost collided, politely skirted around each other, then, in tandem, did a double take. It was the woman from the white Mazda, the one he'd seen last week crying over some bad news the mail had brought. Recognition sparked in her green eyes, and she flashed a little smile. "Oh, hi there." Her cheeks flushed a lovely shade of peach. He didn't want to embarrass her, but took a risk, keeping his tone lighthearted. "You look considerably happier than the last time I saw you here." The blush on her cheeks deepened. "Everything worked out fine." She looked up at him with a sheepish grin and started to say something, but stopped when Mabel Bachman, the elderly wife of Claiborne's mayor, shuffled toward them, weighed down with a bulky stack of packages. Art hurried to hold the door open for the elderly woman. Green Eyes gave a little wave and hurried on toward her car. By the time Art helped Mrs. Bachman with the door to the inner office, the Mazda was crawling down the street, headed north. He felt strangely disappointed. He'd meant to introduce himself to the attractive stranger. Art didn't think she was married. No wedding ring. He'd noticed while she was stuffing her gloves into her bag. Somehow he couldn't picture a married woman driving that sporty Mazda, especially not with a passenger seat that looked like a filing cabinet and library rolled into one. Not that he planned to pursue this green-eyed beauty. She must be new to Claiborne. He'd never seen her before, and he knew just about everyone in town, by face if not by name. He thought about asking around to see if any of his golf buddies knew who she was, but he could just hear the ribbing he'd get. As it was, his friends were constantly trying to set him up with somebody's cousin or stepsister or the former college roommate of a buddy's wife. No, thank you. He did not want to go there. Art drove home, fed Alex, and fixed a bologna sandwich, which he took upstairs to eat while he read Madeline Hauser's missive of the day. A sheaf of manuscript pages lay neatly on the dining room table. Good. She must be agreeable to him proofreading her manuscript. He went into the kitchen for a drink, bending to peer out the kitchen windows as he ran fresh tap water over ice. Outside, the overgrown lawn rippled in the breeze. He made a mental note to remember to come home early enough on Friday to get it mowed before weekend guests arrived. Back in the dining room, he read the note, smiling at the author's list of rules and her promise to list him in her acknowledgments for the book. He ran a hand through his hair. If the book turned out to be drivel, he might have to devise a graceful way to extricate himself from that dubious honor. He would never hear the end of it from his colleagues at the university if his name appeared on the acknowledgments page of a schmaltzy romance novel. Brushing breadcrumbs from his hands, he pushed his sandwich plate away and drew the manuscript close. He pulled a pen from his shirt pocket. Alex jumped into his lap and turned a 360 to brush his tail across Art's nose before finally settling in. "Hey, buddy, what do you think? Am I going to like this lady's writing?" He stroked the cat's thick fur, and Alex revved his feline motor in response. Running one hand absently down the length of the cat's back, Arthur Tyler began to read. Friday morning, Maddie went out to the garage, loaded down with her computer bag and the reference books she would need. Her mind on a new scene for Anne Carraway's story, she turned her keys in the ignition. Nothing. Oh, great. She tried again with the same results. Sighing, she got out of the car and went around to open the hood. She knew as much about car engines as she did about computers. Zip. There didn't seem to be any smoke, nor were any liquids dripping or spewing, so she slammed the hood down and ran inside to call a mechanic. An hour later, with her Mazda at Bud's Automotive and driving a monstrous old Buick, compliments of Bud, Maddie headed west on Main. She was already behind schedule, but she hadn't had the energy to see Mom the night before, so she stopped by the Claiborne Market and picked up a bouquet of rather sad-looking daisies and carnations and drove to the nursing home. Mom was having another bad day, fidgeting and sputtering nonsensical syllables in a tired voice. She didn't seem to realize Maddie was there. Maddie stayed just long enough to transfer the flowers to an unbreakable vase and to visit briefly with the nurse. She felt guilty about not spending more time with Mom, but what difference did it make when her mother didn't know her from the nurse's aide who came to deliver her breakfast tray? She drove to the inn, feeling discouraged and depressed. But as soon as the old Victorian house came into sight, her spirits lifted. She tried not to think about how close the workmen were to finishing the remodeling on Jed and Kate's house. When the last tile was in place, she would have no excuse to come out here anymore. Shaking off the thought, she let herself in, set up her computer, and immediately climbed the 2 flights of stairs to visit her new hero. The man behind the oval glass was as handsome as she remembered, as handsome as he'd been in her dreams. Again, she was struck by how familiar he seemed. That often happened with her characters. She would have a vague picture of a character in mind, only to open up a catalog or magazine and see the perfect face staring back at her. She always clipped pictures of her characters for inspiration. But Anne Carraway's hero had been a long time making himself known. Maddie memorized the masculine contours of the young Arthur Tyler's face, the square jaw, the steel gaze of his pale eyes. Though she couldn't tell from the sepia-toned photograph, she imagined his eyes to be a mesmerizing shade of blue-gray. Oh, to have been born a few decades earlier. She studied Annabeth Tyler's image, the playful glimmer in her eyes, the love on her face so tangible and compelling. Inspired, Maddie hurried downstairs to capture that passion on the computer screen. She typed steadily, breaking for a quick cup of coffee and a bagel she'd bought that morning at Claiborne's newly opened Main Street Deli. The story flowed, and finally Maddie could visualize the perfect ending. She made her fingers fly across the keyboard, eager to finish her tale so she could reread it and add in the subtle nuances of detail and characterization that imbued her stories with her own unique style. Shortly after 3 o'clock, the sound of a motor revving outside startled her. Oh, that's right. This was the day that high school kid mowed the lawn. Her concentration broken, she pushed back her chair and stood to stretch and knead the kinks from her spine. She walked through the hallway into the front parlor and pushed the heavy curtains aside. Though he had his back to her, Maddie could see that the person pushing the mower wasn't the spike-haired teen who usually came. This guy had shiny black hair that curled slightly at the nape of his tanned neck. And he was older. Late 30s, Maddie guessed. Tall and slender, but even beneath the long-sleeved t-shirt he wore, she could see taut muscles flex as he maneuvered the push mower across autumn brittle grass. As the man reached the edge of the driveway and turned the mower toward the house, she took in a sharp breath and let the curtain fall back over the window. She knew that man. It was the guy from the post office, the one who'd caught her crying over Peggy's returned manuscript. Cautiously, she pulled the curtain aside and peered out again. She watched him for a while, but when she went back to the dining room and sat down at her computer, she'd lost her focus. She kept thinking about the handsome man from the post office, the same man mowing the lawn. She tried not to acknowledge the disappointment she felt at discovering he apparently was employed doing odd jobs. Not only was it small-minded and judgmental of her, but she was jumping to conclusions. "Besides," she said under her breath, "you're not in the market for a man, Hauser, remember?" An odd nagging nudged the back of her mind, something she couldn't quite put her finger on. Finally, she heard the lawnmower's engine cut off, and a few minutes later the sound of tires crunching on the gravel drive. She looked at the clock over the stairwell. It was time to leave anyway. She'd toyed with the idea of staying until Mr. Tyler came home some night. She could finally meet the man and perhaps put in a good word for Ginny. But tonight wasn't the time for that. Seeing the stranger from the post office here at the inn had left her feeling oddly disconcerted. She just wanted to go home and hibernate. Art delivered the lawnmower to Mike and Milt's sharpening service and drove back to the inn. When he pulled into the drive, he saw that Madeline Hauser's old Buick was gone. The inn looked neat and tidy, sitting on the freshly cut lawn, and Art admired his handiwork with satisfaction. If the weather cooperated, he could pick up the mower next week and park it in the garage, sharpened and ready to go for a new season. But if this Indian summer persisted, he'd probably have to cut the grass at least once more before it went dormant. He'd rather enjoyed the task of mowing. The physical exertion, the sun on his face, and an October breeze cooling his skin gave him a feeling of gratification and, was it hope? The verse from Genesis 8 that Pastor Rennick had read last Sunday floated through his mind. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, and cold and heat, summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease. Of course, the verse referred to God's promise to Noah that he would never again destroy the earth by a great flood. Still, as Art looked north across the highway to the rippling Milo fields and the trees in their autumn glory, he felt the hope of God's promise bloom in his heart. Tragic things happened, yet in the midst of them, if one were watchful, he could see God's beauty manifested just as it was in the golden russet of the dying leaves. Life went on, and God had given him strength and courage to keep living. The assurance of tomorrow, of a new harvest in the field, of springtime after a long winter, even after Annie. Art got his weekend guests checked in and settled in their rooms, and after dinner, with Alex comfortably ensconced in his lap, Art settled into his recliner with Madeline Hauser's manuscript on his knee, a red pen at the ready. The pen mostly remained capped, however, for Art was captivated by the story. He had read 2 chapters the afternoon before and was immediately impressed, and sheepishly contrite over his premature judgment of Miss Hauser's writing. Now well into the 3rd chapter, he was amazed at the way the author made him believe the book had actually been written in 1871. And yet she'd found the balance of speaking to the sensibilities of the contemporary reader as well. It was a rare thing. The woman had obviously done her research. The historical details were sharply accurate. Her portrayal of the Chicago fire was chilling. He could almost hear the flames from the great conflagration crackling and snapping around him. And her characterizations were multi-layered, with intricately woven relationships that kept him turning pages. He especially liked the hero. Not usually one for love stories, he found himself intrigued by Jonathan Barlow and could easily identify with this flawed man. He stopped reading only long enough to scribble a note to Madeline Hauser. "I am enthralled by your story, Ms. Hauser. I had no idea what I've been missing all these years. I will finish these 5 meager chapters you've left me long before bedtime, and then I face the prospect of an entire weekend not knowing the fate of Anne Carraway, precocious little Charlie, and, of course, the quintessential hero, Jonathan Barlow. Please do not tell me you are one of those cruel writers who kill off beloved characters for no good reason." Art drew a happy face beside that last sentence, lest she take offense. Or lest she was one of those cruel writers. He signed his brief note, picked up the manuscript, and was soon transported again to Chicago, 1871. Chapter 8. By the following Monday morning, Maddie had her Mazda back, complete with a new battery and spark plugs, plus a bill for almost $200. But the car ran like a top. She packed up her computer and books, along with a couple of granola bars to take to her mother before going out to the inn. The tile crew had finally arrived, and she had to skirt around the beefy father-son team and their assorted toolboxes to reach the back door. She'd almost made her escape when the telephone rang. "Could I speak to Madeline Hauser, please?" "Yes, this is Madeline." "Arthur Tyler. From Annabeth's Inn? Is this Madeline Hauser, the author?" The low, gravelly voice was just as Maddie had imagined Arthur Tyler would sound. "Oh, yes, Mr. Tyler. Hello. So nice to talk to you." The muffled sound of hoarse coughing, then, "I apologize. I seem to be coming down with something. I was wondering, were you planning on working at the inn today?" "Well, yes, I was. But I certainly wouldn't have to. I could make other plans." She tried to sound cheery, despite her chagrin at the prospect. "No, no. Please, come ahead. I just wanted to let you know that I'm staying home in bed. Didn't want you to be alarmed if you heard noises coming from the apartment below. I don't want to disturb you. Maybe it would be best if..." "No, please. I'm not trying to discourage you from coming at all. Judging by the way I feel right now, I'll probably sleep all day. I'll have no reason to leave my apartment, and it won't bother me one bit to have someone there. I'm used to having guests overhead. I just wanted to warn you that someone would be downstairs, that's all. In case you hear me rattling around down there." The younger half of the tile-laying crew pounded a rubber mallet on the floorboards and sang off-key with his iPod. Maddie held her breath. She would get exactly nothing written if she stayed home and tried to work in this zoo. "If you're sure?" she said into the phone. "Quite sure. Please, make yourself at home." Mr. Tyler cleared his throat again and gave a gruff chuckle. "I might warn you, though. I'm calling dibs on the famous foot-warming cat today." Maddie laughed into the receiver. "I understand completely. It sounds like you need Alex's services worse than I do." She put the phone back in its cradle and stared at it, unseeing. Because of the photograph in the attic bedroom, Maddie had a distinct image of Arthur Tyler, even if it was a half-century old. She felt she knew him through the delightful notes he left for her, but it was strange to now have a voice to put to those notes. He had almost become like one of her characters, an intangible yet beloved presence in her life. But hearing his throaty voice had made him seem all too real, and suddenly she felt very odd about going out to the inn, knowing he would be downstairs in his apartment. The clatter of a slamming toolbox lid brought her to her senses. Mr. Tyler was expecting her, and she didn't want to call him back and risk disturbing him. Climbing over the flooring materials that littered the kitchen, she grabbed her things and made her escape. On a whim, she stopped by the Main Street Deli and picked up 2 takeout tubs of chicken noodle soup. She'd heat up one for lunch and leave the other in the refrigerator for Mr. Tyler. That ought to be good for what ailed him. And it was another small way she could show her appreciation. Arthur Tyler set his cell phone carefully on his bedside table, flipped off the lamp, and sat in bed, staring at the opposite wall. Odd. If he didn't know better, he'd have thought the woman he'd just spoken to was someone younger. Much younger. But with his sinuses so clogged, his hearing was probably distorted. He shook his head and reached for a tissue, then blew his nose so loudly that Alex leapt from his nest at the foot of the bed and hissed. "It's okay, buddy. Go back to sleep." Art stroked the gray and white fur that now stood comically on end. The cat turned two full circles, plopped back on the bed, and resumed purring. Art tucked his feet into the warm spot the cat provided, slid beneath the fluffy down comforter, and drifted into a NyQuil-induced haze. He awakened sometime later to the sound of footsteps, decidedly feminine ones, overhead. Alex jumped off the bed and trotted down the hallway to investigate. Art glanced at the clock on the bedside table. 8:45. That would be Madeline Hauser. His head throbbed. Stifling a cough, he shrank under the covers. He heard Alex pad softly up the stairs, then the youthful voice from the telephone cooing and clucking at Alex. There went his foot warmer. Traitor. Curious, he crept out of bed and went to the foot of the stairs. He heard the refrigerator open and close, then the sound of water running and the coffee maker beginning its cycle. With his stuffy nose, he couldn't smell the brew, but he sure wouldn't have minded a cup. It would feel great on his scratchy throat. He was tempted to throw a sweatshirt over his t-shirt and sweatpants and go up to introduce himself, but he'd dare not expose her to this nasty bug. At her age, a virus like this could easily turn into pneumonia. Instead, he went to his kitchenette and boiled a mug of water in the microwave. He scooped in two spoonfuls of stale instant coffee and stirred. Wholly unsatisfying. But it would have to do. Someday he'd break down and buy a coffee maker for the apartment. He heard Ms. Hauser talking upstairs again, presumably to his faithless feline. Carrying the steaming mug, he walked over to the partition between the stairway and his living area, careful to stay out of sight, in case the woman should be at the top of the stairs. He didn't want to give her a heart attack. "Come on, kitty," he heard her say. "Go on. Get back down there. You need to stay with your master today. Go on, Alex. I don't have anything for you." How sweet. She was trying to coax Alex back downstairs. He liked this lady. And her voice. Something about it struck a chord with him. It had a musical quality, with the faintest hint of the East Coast in her accent. He was having trouble making that voice match the picture of the author he'd formed in his mind. Feeling lightheaded and groggy, Art went to his room and crawled back under the covers. He drifted off to sleep, thinking how nice it was to have someone upstairs puttering around in the kitchen and making use of his poor, neglected home. Maddie had a hard time concentrating, knowing Arthur Tyler was practically right beneath her. Several times she heard his deep, racking cough, and was tempted to heat up the chicken soup she'd brought and take it down to him. But she didn't want to embarrass the man by catching him in his bathrobe. Or worse. She ignored Alex and focused on editing the chapter she'd written the day before. Finally, the cat sauntered back downstairs. At noon, she heated up a container of the soup. Careful as she was to tread lightly, the floors in the old house creaked with every step. It was a wonder Mr. Tyler didn't storm up the stairs and ask her to leave. At 2 o'clock, having accomplished painfully little, she packed up her laptop and books. Before leaving, she composed a brief note. "Dear Mr. Tyler, I'm so sorry you're ill. I hope I didn't disturb you too much today. It was probably a bad idea for me to come here with you homesick. I'm afraid every creak and squeak in the house must have sounded like a herd of camels to you. I do apologize and hope you're feeling better by the time you read this. I've left you some of the new deli's wonderful chicken noodle soup. As you may know, studies show that chicken soup actually has medicinal value for cold sufferers. I hope you enjoy it. Even if it doesn't cure what ails you, it is delicious. Perhaps it would be best if I don't come back to the inn until you let me know you are well and able to return to work. Praying for your speedy recovery, Madeline Hauser. P.S. I apologize for stealing Alex away from you for a while this morning. I hope you don't think I enticed him with kitty treats or anything. I promise you, he came of his own accord. She drew a smiley face after her postscript and signed the note. Driving home, she fought discouragement at losing a whole day of writing. She simply must learn to discipline herself to work under adverse conditions. When she pulled into her drive a few minutes later, Ginny Ross was next door sweeping the first of autumn's offerings off her front porch. Maddie parked in the garage and went around to the front of the house to talk with her neighbor. "Well, hello there, Miss Madeline." Ginny wielded her broom to scoot a giant red maple leaf onto the grass. Maddie eyed the broom, then looked up into the branches of oaks and maples that had yet to shed their autumn coats. "That's kind of a losing battle, don't you think?" "Oh, I know it is, but it's good exercise. Besides, I enjoy being out of doors on a day like this." "Glorious weather," Maddie agreed. Ginny leaned the broom against the porch railing. So, how many words did you write today? Maddie sighed. Not very many, I'm afraid. Mr. Tyler was homesick, and I couldn't concentrate.
Arthur was at home?
A strange expression crossed Ginny's face.
Did you meet him?
No. He was in bed sick. The poor man has a terrible cough. Ginny clicked her tongue. Oh, my. I don't suppose that was very conducive to a quiet day of writing.
It's not that so much.
It just felt strange to be in his house with him right downstairs. Ginny didn't respond, but picked up the broom and started sweeping again.
Have you made plans for dinner yet, Ginny? Let me take you out to eat at the New Deli.
Oh, you don't need to do that, honey.
I know I don't need to, but I'd like to.
Well, I have been wanting to try out the deli.
It's settled, then. 6 o'clock?
Sounds great.
Just toot your horn when you're ready.
I'll meet you in the driveway. Ginny resumed sweeping, and Maddie imagined there was a livelier lilt to her friend's step.
Well, I hate to admit it, but this chicken noodle soup is almost as good as mine.
Ginny dipped into her bowl for another spoonful of the rich broth. She sat across from Maddie in a cozy booth at the Main Street Deli. Maddie smiled and buttered a slice of wheat toast.
Well, yours must be wonderful, then.
An idea leapt into her brain, and she gave it voice, trying to sound matter-of-fact.
Ginny, you should make some of your homemade soup for Mr. Tyler. That ought to cure what ails him.
It was the perfect opening Maddie had been seeking to get the two together. Ginny didn't need to know that she'd already taken Art some of the deli's soup.
Ginny nodded, eyes glistening. Maybe I'll just do that. You could take it to him when you go tomorrow.
Maddie's head came up, and she scrambled for a way to get her plan back on track.
Well, actually, as long as he's not feeling well, I'll probably work from home. I don't want to disturb him.
But you could go, and...
Nonsense, Ginny said. If you come bearing food, he certainly can't complain. Besides, I'd say it's high time you two met.
Feeling caught in a trap she'd set herself, Maddie didn't argue. Ginny phoned early Tuesday morning to say that she'd been asked to help with a funeral dinner at church, and that Arthur Tyler's chicken soup would have to wait a day. Grateful for the reprieve, Maddie spent the morning at home doing laundry and tidying up the house as best she could with the flooring guys in the kitchen. The housework done, she called her editor in New York to discuss some questions that had come up as she wrote. Janice was talkative and enthusiastic, and Maddie hung up feeling encouraged. It was rather nice to take a day off from writing. Her story still perked quietly in the background, and she had a feeling that when she got back to her computer, the words would flow. She spent the afternoon sitting with her mother in the nursing home's large sunroom. Maddie had brought her mother's Bible and read quietly to her from the worn volume. She didn't know if Mom understood or even heard the words anymore, but Maddie had discovered the scriptures often seemed to calm her mother's restlessness, and her own as well. She read aloud from 1 Corinthians 13, "But when the perfect comes, the partial will be done away. When I was a child, I used to speak as a child, think as a child, reason as a child. When I became a man, I did away with childish things. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know fully, just as I also have been fully known." Was this how it was for Mom, seeing the world as if through a dim mirror? Yet the passage wasn't written only for people with dementia. Maddie's own vision was dark, compared to what it would be when she saw Jesus face to face. Mom's mind had been ravaged by a horrible disease, yet her spirit waited for release, waited to soar to her Savior. It was an amazing thought. She closed the Bible and patted her mother's cold hand. "I love you, Mom." They sat together in silence for a long while, and Maddie tried to enjoy simply being in her mother's presence. Shortly before 5, a white-uniformed nurse's aide appeared in the wide doorway. "Mrs. Hauser, are you ready to go to the dining room?" Mom fingered the crocheted hem of her sweater, not looking up. Maddie put a hand gently on her arm. "Mom, it's time for dinner. Shall we go to the dining room?" Her mother looked into her eyes, but no recognition lit her gaze. Maddie dismissed the nurse's aide with a little wave. "I'll walk down with her." Taking the frail hands in hers, she stood and gently pulled her mother up beside her. Maddie attempted to match the shuffling gait Alzheimer's had bestowed, and together they started down the long corridor. Chapter 9. Before the workmen arrived the next morning, Maddie heard Ginny's cheery greetings sail through the back door. The savory aroma of chicken broth wafted through the house, and Maddie followed the scent into the kitchen.
"Well, good morning."
Ginny set the pot of soup on a dish towel on the kitchen table and looked around the room, taking in the newly laid tile and the granite countertops.
"This is coming along nicely. I'm beginning to believe there might be light at the end of the tunnel."
Maddie ran her hand over the smooth surface of the counter. The guy who's doing the counters can't finish up until next week, but he thought he'd be done in a couple of days. The only thing left then is some touch-up paint. And then you won't need to go to the inn anymore, Ginny said. I suppose it'll be a relief not to have to lug your things back and forth every day.
Yes, I suppose it will. She was surprised at how gloomy the thought made her feel. Maybe after she got the new kitchen cleaned up and all her dishes put away, she'd feel differently. But when would she ever find the time?
I'd better let you get going. Ginny gave the soup pot a proprietary pat. Tell Arthur all he needs to do is put this on the stove until it's warm. I don't want him boiling all the flavor away. Or maybe you could heat it up for him, Maddie. Help yourself to a bowl.
Ginny turned when she got to the back door, a wily glint in her eyes.
There's plenty there for both of you. You could have lunch together.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm sure Mr. Tyler will appreciate it.
She tried to hide her dismay. If Ginny kept this up, Maddie would soon be spoon-feeding the old gentleman. Her neighbor flapped her hands like a mother hen directing chicks.
Go on now. Don't let me keep you.
When Maddie turned onto Hampton Road a few minutes later, soup in tow, she wondered what in the world she'd gotten herself into. Art heard a car on the driveway and sat up in bed, disoriented. He'd tossed and turned all night long, burning up one minute and shivering the next. He reached for a tissue on the nightstand and blew his nose. This bug had laid him low, but it seemed his fever had finally broken. The gravel crunched, and the car came to a stop. Madeline Hauser must have decided to come after all. He swung his legs over the side of the bed and went to the kitchenette to heat some water for coffee. He wished he'd gotten up in time to brew a pot of real coffee upstairs before she arrived. He went to the view-out window overlooking the drive, expecting to see Miss Hauser's old Buick in the drive. He was surprised to see a white Mazda. His heart lurched. Had he scheduled guests for today and forgotten about it? He tried to think where he'd seen that car before. Someone was moving around inside the vehicle, but he couldn't tell who or how many. Pulling on a pair of blue jeans, he flew up the stairs to the main floor and went to the desk in the parlor where he kept the appointment calendar. His head pounded as he flipped through the bookings, trying to remember what day it was. Wednesday. But no guests were scheduled until the weekend. The sound of a key turning in the front door mere feet from where he stood shot adrenaline through his veins. That would be Madeline Hauser. Strange. He hadn't heard her car drive in. Glancing up at the antique mirror over the parlor desk, he caught sight of his reflection. Good grief. 2 days' worth of black stubble sprouted from his jawline. His hair spiked out in 40 different directions, and his nose would give Rudolph a run for his money. He'd frightened the poor woman to death. He clapped the appointment book shut and raced back through the house, practically diving down the stairs to his apartment. Out of breath, with his heart thumping in his ears, Art draped himself over a bar stool in the kitchenette. Above him, the front door closed, and quiet footsteps echoed from the entry. A repeat of Monday morning's litany of sounds began. A computer being turned on, water running into a carafe. What on earth? Had she sent the visitor in the Mazda away? Soon the coffee maker was chugging and hissing. His sinuses were considerably less stuffy today, and the delicious aroma tickled his nose. The footsteps retreated through the house and back out the front door. Maybe she was going to talk to the driver of the Mazda. Curious, Art returned to the window and watched. No sign of Ms. Hauser's Buick, or Ms. Hauser, but the white Mazda was still parked in the driveway. The driver, a woman, had gotten out and was bent over, taking something from the back seat. A brisk breeze kicked up, and she struggled to hold the car door open with one knee while she tugged on something in the car. Finally, she stood and turned to face the house, cradling a large cooking dish of some sort. The wind whipped her hair in her face, and she flipped her head back, trying unsuccessfully to shake the thick mane out of her eyes. She turned slightly and gave the car door a shove with one hip. One very shapely hip, he couldn't help but notice. Where had Miss Hauser disappeared to? The woman turned and started up the front walk. In that instant, something clicked in his brain. The white Mazda. Of course! It was the woman from the post office. The lovely Miss Green Eyes. Coming up his walk. His next breath came in a tight wheeze. What in the world was she doing here? And why was she bringing food?
He wasn't about to answer the door. Not in his condition.
But where was Madeline Hauser? He was sure he'd heard her go out just moments ago. Maybe she would tell Green Eyes he was indisposed. He looked out on the drive again. The Buick was nowhere to be seen. But why would Ms. Hauser set up her computer, make coffee, and then leave? It made no sense. Unless she'd forgotten something and run home for it. That must be it. Art listened for the doorbell. Instead, he heard the front door open and the floorboards above him creak. He leaned against the wall that concealed the stairway. He heard the refrigerator open and close, the sound of coffee being poured.
and soon the steady click of a computer keyboard. What was going on?
Alex slipped past him and scurried up the steps.
Well, hello there, Alex, a familiar voice cooed. Are you being a bad boy again? You're going to get me in trouble, you know. Now you go on. Get back down there and keep Mr. Tyler's feet warm.
Art closed his eyes and lifted his chin toward the ceiling.
Tyler, you idiot! How could you be so dumb?
On impulse, he hurried to the bedroom and threw open Annie's side of the closet. Annabeth's sister and nieces had helped him pack up Annie's clothes and shoes more than a year ago, but two shelves in the back of the closet still held part of her beloved collection of books. Art knelt in front of the shelves and ran his fingers along the titles, looking frantically for one particular volume. There it was, Hope's Song by Madeline Hauser. Art slipped the book from the shelf, knowing what he would find even before he opened the cover. He turned the book over, opened to the back flap of the dust jacket, and stared at the photograph. A familiar pair of mesmerizing green eyes stared back at him. The beautiful young woman at the post office, the one who'd made his heart beat a little faster, was Madeline Hauser. Green Eyes was the author of the compelling novel in which he'd immersed himself for the past few nights. This lovely creature, the one who'd penned the delightful notes Art had so looked forward to each evening, was Ginny's friend. Ginny's young friend. And she'd spent nearly every day of the past month in this very house. His house! How could his perceptions have been so ridiculously off base? What happened to the gray-haired old lady? The one who walked with a cane and drove an old monster of a Buick? Why hadn't Ginny told him? Yet, what had there been to tell? Ginny couldn't know he was infatuated with the lovely stranger at the post office. He looked at Madeline Hauser's publicity photo on the book jacket again. If he had only taken Ginny's advice, he would have read one of Ms. Hauser's books and put two and two together long ago. Art fell back against the bed and sat with his head in his hands, laughing softly to himself, as each intricate facet of this great deception, one he'd apparently manufactured in his own mind, came to light. 20 minutes later, he felt a brush of soft fur against his bare arm.
Alex, you rascal. You knew all along, didn't you?
He chuckled and scratched the cat under the chin, then hauled himself off the floor and went down the hall to the bathroom. It was time to shower and shave and properly introduce himself to the lovely, talented, and ever so young Madeline Hauser. Maddie heard the sound of running water downstairs. Mr. Tyler must be up and around. Maybe he would come upstairs and she could offer to warm some of Ginny's soup for him. That ought to make her neighbor happy. She felt rather excited and just a bit nervous at the prospect of finally meeting her mysterious host and the hero of her novel. But of course she wouldn't mention that. A flush of heat crept up her neck at the thought. She saved her latest chapter to the computer and went into the kitchen to put Ginny's soup on to heat. If Mr. Tyler didn't come up, maybe she'd get up the courage to take a bowl down to him. Compliments of Ginny, of course. She found a package of soup crackers in a basket on top of the refrigerator and fixed a tray with a cloth napkin and a glass of ice water. On a whim, she went out to the front porch and plucked one of the faded roses from the bush near the front porch. She placed it in a tiny bud vase she found in a cupboard. Surveying her handiwork with satisfaction, she stirred the soup once more and listened for sounds of life downstairs. The water had stopped running, but all was quiet below. Maybe he'd gone back to bed. She certainly didn't want to wake him. Not sure what to do, she turned the heat down under the soup and went back to try to write another scene in her novel. A few unproductive minutes later, Alex's meow caused her to look up from her computer. Footsteps sounded on the stairway not 10 feet from where she sat. Ah, he was awake. She was finally going to meet the elusive Arthur Tyler. Sitting straighter in her chair, she slipped off her glasses, moistened her lips, and tucked her hair behind her ears. But the head that appeared over the railing did not belong to Arthur Tyler. It was the lawn guy, the man from the post office. Maddie took in a sharp breath, mildly alarmed that he had just walked into the house without knocking. "Oh, hello," she said, trying to appear calm. She pushed back her chair and stood, glad for the massive oak table between them. "Are you here to mow the lawn?" She motioned toward the front of the house. "The lawn?" The man stared at her as though she were speaking Swahili. Mr. Tyler is homesick today," she explained. "He's downstairs. I can get him if you like." The man's bemused gaze made her extremely uncomfortable. "Madeline?" Maddie gulped. How did he know her name? And today wasn't the day the lawn guy usually came. Her heart beat erratically and she struggled for a breath. The man came up the last 2 stairs to the landing, and Maddie took a step back, bumping into the chair behind her.
He put a hand to his chest. Miss Hauser, I'm Arthur Tyler. What? What kind of nutcase was this guy? I'm sorry if I frightened you, he shook his head. And I am homesick today. I don't think I'm contagious anymore. I just thought it was time I introduced myself. He waited, looking at her with something like amusement in his eyes. You're Arthur Tyler? But I thought... Yes, I'm Art Tyler. You thought I was someone else? Maddie reached behind her, felt for the brocade seat of the straight-back chair, and crumpled onto it. I'm sorry, I'm a little confused right now. I thought... The truth began to unfold in her mind, and she giggled. Well, I thought you were... He waited, dark brows knit together. She started again. For some reason, I assumed you were Ginny's friend. Well, I know you are her friend, but I thought you were Ginny's age. I thought you were old. She knew she was rambling, but her brain was having trouble wrapping itself around the now obvious truth. Arthur Tyler threw back his head and laughed. You thought I was old? He said, when he finally caught a breath. I thought the same thing. You thought you were old? Maybe he was a nutcase after all. He laughed again. No, no. I thought you were old. Ginny said she had this writer friend, and I just jumped to conclude. Apparently we both jumped to some conclusions. Her mind whirled, trying desperately to sort out this whole outrageous scenario. Yes, Arthur said, a hint of suspicion creeping into his voice. And I don't recall our friend Ginny doing anything to correct those misperceptions. Maddie thought for a minute, remembering the mischievous gleam in Ginny's eye earlier that morning. You're right. I'm sure I said something that would have let her know I thought, wait a minute, and to think I was trying to... She stopped, feeling herself blush. What? Maddie giggled again. I was trying to set you and Ginny up. I thought she had a crush on you. But all this time... Arthur Tyler took a step toward her, and a light of recognition came to his eyes. Eyes that, up close, were exactly the shade of blue-gray Maddie had imagined. Ginny Ross was trying to set us up? Is that it? Maddie smiled and nodded slowly, remembering her neighbor's insistence that Maddie deliver the chicken soup in person. I have a feeling that's exactly what she was up to. Arthur pulled a chair out from the dining room table, turned it around, and straddled it, resting his arms on the high back. Well, isn't this one for the books? No pun intended. He grinned, looking for all the world like Jonathan Barlow. They sat, looking at one another, shaking their heads. Finally, Arthur unfolded his lean body from the chair, rose, and stretched out a hand. Madeline Hauser, I'm Arthur Tyler. I'm very pleased to finally meet you. The real you. Maddie took his hand, smiling broadly. And I'm pleased to meet you too, kind sir. After all our correspondence, I wish I could say I feel like I know you, but I'm so confused right now, I'm afraid that wouldn't be altogether true. No, he laughed. Not for me either. He dipped his head. But I'd certainly like to remedy that. Chapter 10. The kitchen smelled of chicken broth and coffee and the slightest hint of some delicate feminine cologne. After being without his olfactory senses for several days, Art inhaled each scent with fresh appreciation. He smiled at the woman sitting across from him and spooned another bite of the fragrant soup into his mouth. Mmm, this is wonderful, he said over a mouthful of noodles. I think I feel better already. I can see why they say this stuff has medicinal value, he added with a wink. Well, I'd say this goes down a bit easier than any medicine. Madeline Hauser dabbed at the corner of her mouth with a paper napkin. For a few minutes, the two ate together in silence, a remarkably comfortable silence, given the fact they'd met only 20 minutes ago. Yet watching her, Art felt he knew the soul of the beautiful woman sitting at his table. His heart swelled at the amazing discoveries they'd made. To think, they'd each had such skewed perceptions of the other. Every time he thought of the comedy of errors that had brought them to this moment, he wanted to laugh out loud. Madeline looked up and caught him watching her, but the quirk of her shapely lips told him she was having similar thoughts. So, all this time, you've imagined me as a doddering old man? Not exactly doddering, she tilted her head. I was thinking more along the lines of distinguished and dapper. Art was charmed by the blush of crimson that climbed her throat. I wish I could give parallel adjectives for the picture I had of Ms. Madeline Hauser, elderly author. But the truth is, I thought you were just plain old. Hey! She shot him a look that was exactly what he'd aimed for. He cocked his head to one side and held up a finger. Ah, but let's talk about my opinion of the mysterious woman at the post office. Let's not, she protested. But her smile clearly said the opposite. I desperately wanted to get to know her. he hesitated. "Do I dare ask what you were so upset about that day? In the car?" Madeline put her spoon down and thought for a minute, then giggled like a schoolgirl. "What?" She put an elbow on the table and rested her chin on one hand. "I was upset because my proofreader had just returned my manuscript with a note saying she was quitting." "Oh." One more piece of the puzzle plunked into place. "Well, hey, didn't you tell me that one day you'd probably be able to laugh about it?" She laughed again, a sound Art was quickly growing to love. When her amusement subsided, a wistful note crept into her voice. "I really didn't expect that day to come quite so soon. I'm so glad it did." She rewarded him with another smile. "Me too. Your book is wonderful, Madeline. May I call you Madeline?" It felt right, but he wanted to be certain. "My friends call me Maddie." He nodded. "Then Maddie it is. And I mean it. Your book is excellent. Thank you, Arthur. Please, my friends call me Art." "Art, then." She bobbed her chin. "I was nervous about having you read it." "What? You nervous about some old geezer's opinion?" "I'd grown to like that old geezer quite a bit. And to respect his opinion." A mischievous glimmer came to her eyes. "Frankly, I'm not sure how much I'd value the critique of a young whippersnapper like you." If he'd believed in love at first sight, he would have dropped to one knee and proposed on the spot. But he managed to restrain himself and simply enjoy her clever wit. "Maddie." Yes, the name fit Green Eyes perfectly. She jumped up and went to the kitchen, came back with a pitcher of water, and refilled his glass. "Thank you. You don't have to wait on me, you know." "I don't mind. You're not feeling well. Besides, I can never begin to repay you for allowing me to take over your house like this. Speaking of which," he balled up his napkin and pushed back his chair, "I need to let you get back to work." He gathered up their bowls and spoons and carried them into the kitchen. Poking his head back into the dining room, he added, "Pretend I'm not here. I'll take care of these dishes. You get back to that story. I'm ready for more chapters." He went back to the kitchen and ran the sink full of hot water. While he washed dishes, he listened to the rhythmic tap-tap-tap of her keyboard. He was wiping off the counters when he heard her giggling again. He poked his head into the dining room. "Did our story take a humorous turn?" She looked up and studied him for a moment. "I may as well tell you. You're my hero." "Wow. Just because I did the dishes?" "No. The photograph upstairs." She pointed toward the ceiling. He waited, dish towel in hand. "Would you care to clue me in? Or would you rather write me a note?" He grinned. She gave him a crooked smile and dipped her head. "I saw the photograph upstairs of you and your wife. The old-fashioned one. I thought it was you when you were young. Before I knew you weren't old, I mean." She shook her head. "This is very complicated." He waited, rather enjoying her discomfort. "I needed a face for my hero, and, well, I borrowed yours. I hope you don't mind." Art curbed a grin. "No wonder I liked Jonathan Barlow so well." Maddie laughed again and turned a luscious shade of pink. But he was flattered at the implication. "Ginny said your wife, Annabeth, died." It was almost a whisper. His breath caught at the sound of Annie's name, but the sympathy in Maddie's expression touched a place deep within. "Yes," he looked at the floor. "Cancer. It'll be 3 years next April." "I'm so sorry. She was very beautiful." He nodded, unable to speak. Suddenly desperate to change the subject, he moved toward the stairway. "I'm keeping you from your work." "Oh, no." She scooted her chair back from the table. "I'm not going to kick you out of your own dining room. I'll go now. I can come back after you've returned to work. Please, don't go, Maddie. I needed to get busy anyway. I have papers to grade downstairs." "Well, if you're sure." "Positive. It was very nice to finally meet you." He smiled and stretched out a hand again. "Madeline." She took it, and the pink in her cheeks blossomed. "You too, Arthur." Downstairs, he retrieved a stack of freshman essays from his briefcase and took them to the bar in the kitchen. But thoughts of Annie, and of the woman upstairs, wouldn't let him concentrate. More than once, the music of feminine laughter floated down the stairway. He didn't know if Green Eyes was writing a funny scene, or if she was, like him, remembering some little incident, some little providential twist of timing that had led to their meeting today. All he knew was that this house had been too long without a woman's laughter. Chapter 11. The next morning, when Maddie emerged from the steamy bathroom, hair still damp from her shower, the answering machine blinked at her. She listened to the message while she did her makeup. "Hello, Maddie. It's Art. Just wanted to let you know, Ginny's soup worked its magic, and I'm going back to work today, so the house is all yours. Please make yourself at home. I've left you a note in the usual place. Well, that's all. Bye now. A twinge of guilt accompanied the thrill that went up her spine at the sound of Art's voice, but she detected a note of hesitancy, too, and wondered what it meant. She'd dreamed of Arthur Tyler, Art, both waking and sleeping, since she'd left the inn yesterday. She had fallen, and fallen hard. But how could that be? She didn't even know the man. Was she just in love with the idea of being in love? She stared in the mirror as she ran a brush through her hair. You don't know what love is, Hauser. But oh, how she wanted to learn. Sitting across from Art over chicken noodle soup yesterday, talking, laughing together, it seemed as though they were dear old friends. She smiled at her reflection. Old. And she did know something of Art's dreams and desires. In a way, they'd been courting since the second day she went to the inn and found his thoughtful note in reply to hers. They just hadn't realized it. Maddie wondered what he was feeling this morning. Had he sensed the connection as strongly as she? Even though his wife had been gone for several years, it was obvious from his reaction yesterday that he was still reeling from the loss. She'd need to tread lightly. With a swarm of butterflies in her stomach, she drove out to the inn, feeling a new kind of anticipation over the note that awaited. She let herself in and hurried to the dining room. Without bothering to set up her computer, she picked up the sheet of paper on the table. As she read, her heart dipped and soared and dipped again like a kite in a fickle Kansas wind. Dear Maddie, not Miss Hauser, not Madeline, but dear Maddie, I'm still trying to sort out all the crazy misunderstandings that kept us from meeting until yesterday, but somehow I know it was for the best. I think perhaps if we'd met that first day you came to write at the inn, we never would have grown to know and respect one another as we have. At least, I hope you share those feelings. I suppose you need to know that I've put up some walls where women, especially beautiful, talented, available women, are concerned. My marriage was an extremely happy one, but it had a tragic ending. And since you and I have been honest with each other from the start, I'll confess to a tremendous fear that I will never be able to love that way again. I don't want you to expect what I'm not sure I can give. Perhaps I am seriously premature in sharing these things with you, and now in making a request. But what I said yesterday was true. I would like to get to know you better. Could we have dinner again soon? A real, dare I say it, date? If I've misread your interest, please be honest with me and please forgive me. But if not, are you free this Saturday night? The college symphony is performing and I have 2 tickets. And someone told me about a new restaurant not far from campus. We could eat before the concert. I admit I'm a little nervous about this next step in our friendship. Frankly, I adored the elderly, charming, safe Madeline Hauser. I'm a little sad to think she's gone from my life, but I have a feeling her younger counterpart will win me over just as quickly. In fact, I'm not so sure she hasn't already. I'll hope to find your response when I get home tonight, but if you need to think it over for a few days, I will understand. Your friend, Art. Maddie read the note again, caressing the smooth paper beneath her palm. How was she supposed to finish her novel, make her deadline, breathe, when his letter contained such undisguised hesitancy, such fragile promise? She read it a third time and found herself more confused than ever. What did the man want? First it seemed as if he were making romantic overtures, but then he held out a warning that no one could fill Annie's place in his heart. Yet in his very next breath he was asking her for a date. Did the man have a clue what he wanted? Did he care that he was stringing her along like some kind of puppet? She picked up her pen and turned over Art's note, ready to write her reply on the back. But she didn't want to part with this paper. She needed to take it home and read it again, attempt to decipher the true message his words held. Digging in her computer bag, she found a legal pad. She sat for several minutes, pen poised, mind reeling, before she knew what she wanted to say. Dear Art, rest assured I am every bit as frightened and uncertain as you are. Having said that, my calendar is free for Saturday, and I can't think of a more pleasant way to spend it than at dinner and the symphony with a friend. Shall we keep it at that, with no other expectations or potential? Just friends? I could use a friend right now. Maddie. She laid the pen and pad on the table. She understood what Art meant about being sad to see the imagined elderly friend go. She felt the same about old Mr. Tyler. With him, she'd never had to measure her words so carefully. Never had to worry that she would be judged the way men her age judged women. Had they ruined a wonderful friendship by the simple act of being introduced? Did the mere fact that they were the same age, and therefore eligible for romance, doom their friendship? This surely broke her track record for destroying a relationship. Friends to strangers almost before she met the guy. She opened her laptop, pulled up her manuscript, and forced herself to start typing. But what she really wanted was to put her head in her hands and weep. On Thursday evening, Art sat in Ginny Ross's cozy living room, sipping tea from a fragile china cup. They'd discussed global news and local politics, and now they'd worked their way down to the weather. Beside him on the slip-covered sofa, Ginny set her own teacup on the doily-strewn coffee table. "Well, enough small talk. What did you really come for, Arthur?" Art smiled. Ginny had never been one to mince words. Okay. He would lay it all out for her and see if she had a cure for his jumbled emotions. "I think I'm in love with your neighbor." Ginny hooked a thumb to the north and feigned shock. "Elma Wheaton? I don't know, Art. She's awfully old for you, don't you think?" "Very funny, Ginny. You know exactly who I mean." He sobered. "I think I'm in love with Madeline Hauser." Ginny's expression was unreadable. "So why are you telling me? Seems Madeline ought to be the first to hear this startling announcement." "She already has. Well, sort of." "Arthur, how do you sort of tell a woman you love her? Seems to me you either do or you don't." "Ginny." Her eyes softened, and she reached over to pat his knee. "It's Annie, isn't it? I know it's not right to hold on, Ginny. I know it. But I don't know what to do about it. Art, Annie's not coming back. Ever. I know you understand that," she said gently. "And I know Annie wanted you to go on with your life." He swallowed hard. "I'm just so afraid that no one will ever be able to compare to her. We had such a good thing, Ginny. Right up until the end. A perfect thing, and..." "No, it wasn't perfect, Art," Ginny wagged her head. "My memory sometimes tends to gloss over the bad times Grover and I had, too. But that wouldn't be right. It wouldn't be honest. Oh, it was mostly good, just as it was for you and Annie. But don't forget the struggles, Art. Don't romanticize things. That's not fair. Not to Annie, and certainly not to Madeline." Art thought about Ginny's words. Yes, he and Annie had sometimes fought, but they'd never let the sun go down on their anger. They'd never hurt each other beyond forgiveness. It was nothing he could take credit for. It was all Annie. Her spirit had been ever gentle and loving, even after she'd become so ill. What if I marry someone else, and it's not as good as it was with Annie? I've known what marriage can be. I can't risk ruining the memories I have with Annie." Ginny leaned in and took both his hands in hers. Her frail, veined hands were dwarfed by his own, but there was surprising strength in her grasp. "Arthur Tyler." She gave his hands a little shake that made him look her in the eye. "I know you well enough to know that you, of all people, are not going to do anything to sully the institution of marriage, unless you're putting your faith in yourself. But I know you better than that. You've always been one to trust God for your life. Why are you withholding this one thing now?" I guess I didn't realize I was." "Well, you are." He didn't reply. Didn't need to. Art looped one end of his necktie over the other and tied the knot unconsciously. The man staring back at him from the mirror certainly didn't look riddled with guilt. He wished they could trade places. It was wrong to feel this way. He knew that. Annie had been gone a long time. And Ginny was right. Annie had given her blessing for him to find love again. At the time, he'd resented it, still refusing to believe God would ever take his Annie from him. For a long time after she died, her blessing was meaningless, since he'd had no desire to even look at another woman. But now, there was a living, breathing woman who had stolen into his life under cover of acute misunderstanding, and he'd fallen in love almost without realizing it. Okay, maybe it was a stretch to call it love. He didn't really know Maddie, yet he felt he did. The notes they'd shared had opened windows into each of their hearts. Reading her manuscript had opened a door. And now, having met her, having discovered that they shared much more than he'd ever imagined, he could not deny she made his heart pump to a rhythm he'd long forgotten. Wednesday, he'd sat across the table from a beautiful woman, and for the first time since Annabeth McGee, he'd experienced that enthralling pull on his heartstrings. It had energized him like nothing had in a very long time. 3 days later, that tug on his heart had become a tug of war. And right now, guilt was pulling far more weight on the rope of his emotions. Luckily, Maddie didn't appear to be as smitten as he was. In truth, his heart had sunk when he'd read her rather cool note. She seemed determined to remain friends and nothing more. But perhaps that was a good thing. Then there was the matter of their date. No, he mentally corrected himself. If she only wanted to be friends, he had to quit thinking of tonight as a date. Maddie was probably dressing for the evening this very minute. He wondered how she would look all dressed up.
Stop it, Tyler. She's a friend. That's all. An image of her smooth, pale hair and those tantalizing green eyes popped into his mind. He could almost hear the melody of her laughter. His thoughts were hardly appropriate toward a woman who was only a friend. But he couldn't help it. He was going to drive himself insane thinking this way. With a sharp tug, he finished his tie, padded his pockets to be sure the symphony tickets were there, and headed out to the pickup. Chapter 12. Maddie paced the living room, making occasional forays into the bathroom to check her lipstick, add one last spritz of hairspray, and adjust the collar of her white silk blouse. It wasn't often she got to dress up, and it had been rather fun to go all out this evening. She just hoped she hadn't overdone it. She didn't want Art to get the wrong idea. The front doorbell chimed. Maddie's breath caught in her throat. She slipped on a cashmere sweater, rubbed damp palms on her long velvet skirt, and went to answer the door. Art stood on the porch, handsome in a dark suit with a tie the same shade of blue as his eyes. "Maddie, you look lovely." Maddie felt certain, looking into the deep pools of those eyes, that it wasn't the appreciation of a mere friend she saw there. "You clean up pretty nice, too," she teased, determined to keep things light. Art led the way down the front walk. November had come in on a crisp breeze, and she shivered and pulled her sweater tighter. Art went around to open the door for her. It was a bit of a climb to get into his pickup, but she managed to do so without looking like a total klutz. He carefully tucked the hem of her skirt out of harm's way before closing the door. They were silent while Art navigated the tree-lined streets to the edge of town. He merged easily into the flow of traffic on the interstate and set the cruise control. "This symphony is probably going to seem pretty podunk to you. Compared to the concerts you hear in New York, I mean." She waved off his warning. "It's been so long since I've been to a real concert, I doubt I'd know one from a kindergarten kazoo band." He laughed. "That's good, because that may be exactly what this group sounds like to your ears. Art, I do love classical music, but I'm no critic." "Well, we'll see after tonight." He flashed a droll grin. For the rest of the drive into Wichita, they talked animatedly about music and movies and books they'd enjoyed. In the space of an hour, she successfully eliminated her earlier image of Art as a distinguished elderly professor, and replaced it with the witty, handsome, flesh-and-blood man seated behind the wheel of this Chevy 4x4, an exchange she made gladly. Art asked about her writing career and gave a glowing critique of her work in progress. "I'm not finished yet," he said, "but what I've read so far is beautifully done. I will truly feel guilty if you pay me to proofread this, Maddie." "Well, if you won't let me pay you, then you'd better quit reading right now, because I'm already so indebted to you for the use of the inn, I'll never get out of hock." "Hey," he said lightly, "can we come to some sort of understanding about this? We both feel we're cheating the other, so let's just call it even and not bring it up again." She nodded. "I could go with that plan." They ate at a new Italian place on the east side of town. Dinner brought more pleasant conversation. Again, Maddie had the sense she'd known this man forever. Later, in spite of Art's caveat, Maddie thoroughly enjoyed the concert. The small symphony was quite accomplished, and several of Maddie's favorite concertos were on the program. She was sorry when it was over. On the way out the door, he purchased one of the group's CDs, and they listened to it on the drive home. "You know," she said, as strains of Mendelssohn threaded around them, "when I saw this pickup truck, I was just sure we'd be listening to country music all the way." Art smiled. "I like to keep people guessing." Boy, did he have that right. "Actually, I do listen to country," he said. "I like the stories those ballads tell. But there's something timeless about the classics. Did your wife, did Annie like classical music?" Maddie ventured, wanting to be sure he knew the topic wasn't off-limits for her. There was an overlong silence. Maddie remembered Art's quick exit the last time the topic of Annabeth came up, and for a minute she was afraid she'd stepped on sacred ground. "Yes, she did like music," Art said finally. "Annie played the piano beautifully, and always had Mozart or Vivaldi going on the stereo." He rested one wrist on the steering wheel. "Do you play? Piano?" She cringed and shook her head. "Only for my own enjoyment. I play by ear. By heart, my mom calls it. I'm sure you play beautifully." "Oh, I would never inflict my pathetic attempts on an audience. But it's cheap therapy. I'm out of practice, though. My sister's piano is desperately out of tune, and I left my piano in storage in New York." "Are you going back?" he asked abruptly. "To New York, I mean. Is Claiborne only temporary?" She wondered how much rode on her answer. "I honestly don't know. My mom is only 68. She could live for many years. I want to be here for her." "How is she doing?" Maddie was moved by the genuine concern in his voice. "That's a hard question to answer. I don't think she's known me for quite a while now.
That must be really difficult for you. I admire you for wanting to be there for her. She shook her head. I'm not doing anything heroic, but I am glad it's worked out for me to be here. And I do like Claiborne, more than I thought I would. She didn't tell him that he was a lot of the reason why. If it weren't for the house being so torn up, I couldn't complain. Oh, but if it weren't for the house being torn up, you wouldn't be sitting here beside me right now. I tend to think that was a gift. His words confused her as much as his note had. This had to stop. She drew herself up in the seat. Art, I'm too old to play games, so I want to get this out in the open. Okay. His tone was understandably cautious. She took a deep breath. Your note the other day confused the life out of me. He seemed surprised. What do you mean? In one breath you're asking me for a date, and in the next you're warning me you've put up this wall because of Annie. Then you change gears again and say I've already won you over. Whatever that means. Against her will, her voice went up an octave. And now you're saying our friendship is a gift. At least I think that's what you meant. The thing is, I don't have a clue where I stand with you. I don't know if you're determined we can never be more than friends, or if you truly meant this night to be a date. She felt a little foolish, and more than a little vulnerable after laying everything out so blatantly. Art raked a hand through his hair, then put both hands back on the steering wheel, and stared straight ahead for a long minute. She was afraid she'd ticked him off. When he finally spoke, his voice was so quiet she could scarcely hear it over the truck's engine. Maddie, I'm sorry. He reached across the seat and took her hand in his. A tiny tremor went up her spine. His Adam's apple bobbed in his throat. If I've confused you, it's only because I'm confused myself. I do want to get to know you. No. He turned to meet her gaze briefly before training his eyes back on the road. As long as we're being totally honest here, the truth is, I feel as though I do know you. And I like what I see, Maddie. I like it a lot. I don't just mean what I see with my eyes, although that's altogether pleasant, too. For a moment his eyes sought hers again, and he gave her hand a squeeze. Maddie felt the pleasure of his words warm her cheeks. What I really mean is, well, his grin turned impish. I had a bit of a crush on you when I thought you were 80 years old. But you were safe then. You weren't going to mess up the comfortable little world of grief I've lived in. Gotten comfortable in, as dumb as that might sound. He waited, as though wanting a response. But she didn't know what to say. I know this sounds totally unreasonable, Maddie. But now that I've met you, I feel like I'm almost, I don't know, in love with you. Which would be wonderful if that feeling weren't eating me alive with guilt. What? She stared at him. Now he was in love with her? The man was crazy. And driving her there on a fast train. She finally found her voice. You feel guilty because of Annie? He nodded. But even in the darkness of the truck's cab, he couldn't hide the emotion that tinted his expression. Art, she pulled her hand out of his warm grasp. I've had my heart broken enough times that I don't go seeking out the experience. There's no way I can compete with a memory. And if you're looking for someone to ease your guilt, I'm sorry, but I don't think I'm your gal. I'm sorry, he said. I want to be able to open my heart again. I truly do. And I've never said that to any woman before. But I can't seem to find the way. She stared at her lap. Thank you for being honest with me. I think. I'm trying, Maddie. That's all I can promise. I know. I know you are. But I don't know if my heart can take the chance that you'll fail. They drove the rest of the way home in silence. When they got to her house, Art came around and opened her door. She rummaged frantically in her purse, looking for her keys, not wanting to create an awkward moment at the door. She finally found them in a corner of her bag. She jangled them in front of her. Let me walk you to the door. Art smiled, and she felt her heart respond. It's okay. You don't have to. Maddie, he scuffed the toe of his shoe in the gravel. I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I'm sorry. I've ruined what has been a delightful evening till now. It's okay, Art. You can't help what you feel. She made her voice bright. I enjoyed the concert very much. And thank you for dinner. It was delicious. She turned and started up the walk. She was aware of his pickup idling in the drive, until he saw she was safely in the house. She locked the front door behind her, flipped off the lights, and parted the curtain. She watched him back out of her driveway, and followed the taillights of his truck until they disappeared from sight. Letting the drapes fall, she put a hand over her heart, in a futile effort to assuage the ache there. Art had said he wanted to open his heart again. Well, she'd done just that, and look where it had gotten her. She crossed the room to Kate's old upright piano, and ran her fingers idly over the dusty keys. Their sour, metallic clang pierced the stillness.
A dissonant note hung in the air, and Maddie closed her eyes. She was playing at love the way she played the piano. By heart. Chapter 13. Back at the inn, Art got ready for bed, but sleep eluded him. Finally, he crawled from beneath the covers and paced his apartment into the wee hours of the morning, thinking, praying, agonizing. The pain he'd seen in Maddie's eyes tonight broke his heart. He'd done that to her. He wanted so desperately to put the past behind him, to offer Maddie his love with no reservations. But what kind of man would he be if he could let Annie go so easily? On a whim, he went to the closet and pulled their wedding album from the top shelf. He sank to the floor at the foot of the bed and put the album in his lap. He'd nearly worn the pages out those first weeks after she died. But months had passed since he'd last looked at the photographs and mementos tucked inside. As he leafed through the pages, he remembered why. The vivid images made him remember every curve of her face, every nuance of her smile. In one shot, the camera had captured Annie's luminous expression as she walked down the aisle toward him. She'd been oblivious, they both had, to the horror that would ravage their lives a short decade later. Art turned the last page and slowly eased the cover closed. As he put the album aside on the floor, another book caught his eye. The hardcover copy of Maddie's novel, the one that had revealed her identity to him. Hope's Song. He slid it from the shelf again, flipped open the back cover, and stared at her image. Judging by the book's copyright date, the photograph must have been at least 4 or 5 years old. Maddie's hair was shorter and curlier, but her smile was the same, and the sparkle of her eyes. He riffled the pages absently, deep in thought. Something caught his eye. Yellow highlighting and notes scribbled in Annie's handwriting. How often had he scolded her for dog-earing and marking in their books? It had been a source of frustration for him. But her friends loved to borrow her books. It was like getting a free study guide, they always said. He thought about what Ginny had said that afternoon, and remembered a heated argument he'd had with Annie over what he viewed as her careless disrespect of books. He'd called her irresponsible and wasteful, and brought her to tears. Ginny was right. It hadn't all been a bed of roses. They'd had their ugly moments. He flipped through the pages and read a few of Annie's cryptic marginal notes. Echoes the theme of Pastor Rennick's sermon, one read. Share with study group, said another. It was a gift to have this peek into Annie's heart, but his own heart stuttered when he saw his name in the margin. Read this section to Art. Had she done so? Annie was always reading him snippets, but he didn't remember her ever reading from Maddie's books. Of course, he hadn't known Maddie then. He read the highlighted paragraphs and scratched his head. What had Annie intended him to glean from the words? Turning to the cover flap, he read the synopsis of the book, trying to put the passage she'd marked into context. The novel was set during the Civil War. His gut twisted when he read that the heroine was dying of consumption. No wonder Annie identified with the storyline. He read the paragraphs again. Maisie came in and flung open the window, muttering something about fresh air. A minute later, the servant sashayed out of the room with the wash basin sloshing, leaving the scent of lavender in its wake. Sarah watched from the bed, her thin fingers worrying the rough hem of the coverlet. Maisie had not so much as glanced her way. Sarah blanched. Had she become invisible in her confinement? Her gaze traveled to the window, and in an instant she felt transported beyond the splintered sash. Her sick room faded to nothing, and she was somehow dancing among the willows that bent in the April breeze. She could almost feel the cool grasses between her bare toes, relish the warmth of the sun on her arms. For one moment, she remembered what it had been like to be healthy and whole. It was a gift, and even as her spirit danced, she thanked the giver. Had Annie experienced something similar during her illness, or was there some deeper meaning he wasn't quite getting? He would show the passage to Maddie. Maybe she would understand what Annie might have wanted him to learn from it. Paging through the last half of the book, he came to a notation on the last page. It was printed in bold letters and underlined twice. I love this author. Stunned, he lifted his eyes to the ceiling and beyond. Amazing. Annie had met Maddie through her words, had connected with her heart, her soul, her faith in God, and had come to love her. Perhaps this was the message he most needed to hear right now, the sign he'd been looking for. He turned to the author's photograph again and brought it slowly to his lips. He was finally ready to let go, and he could hardly wait to tell Maddie. Chapter 14. The granite countertops were elegant, and Maddie's good china gleamed behind glass-fronted cabinets. She walked across the pristine tiled floor and stood in the doorway, surveying the results of weeks of chaos and labor. It was finally finished, and it was beautiful. Maddie sighed. Her days would finally belong to her again. No more letting in a crew of noisy workmen every morning, or tripping over sawhorses at night. No more microwaved suppers. No more hauling her entire office back and forth each day. The house was livable, and she could set up her office and finish her book in peace. So why did she feel so melancholy? Stupid question. She knew why. It had been almost a week since her disastrous date with Arthur Tyler. Except for the friendly, noncommittal notes on the dining room table, she had not seen him or spoken to him. And today would be her last day at the inn. She would sit at the smooth oak table and listen to the familiar, soothing creaks of the old house. She would write her chapters and coax Alex to warm her feet. She would jot down one last note of thanks to Arthur Tyler. And then she'd come home. Home. The very word filled her with longing. As beautiful as it was, Kate's fancy house, with its new kitchen and spacious rooms, had never quite felt like home to her. Even the New York loft Maddie loved couldn't hold a candle to the one place that had worked its way into her heart. In the space of a few weeks, Annabeth's Inn had become home to Maddie. It wasn't the bricks and boards, or the cottonwoods and rose bushes, or even the lovable cat that made it feel like home. It was Art. And knowing that, she wasn't sure she could ever really feel at home again anywhere else. Sighing again, she went to gather her things. She loaded the car and backed out of the driveway. Today, the short drive to the inn felt like a walk to the gallows. She turned onto Hampton Road, and a few minutes later, turned the key in Art's front door. She walked through the hall to the dining room. As always, his note was waiting. A short one today. Had he remembered this was her last day? She set up her computer and started coffee, putting off the moment when she would read Art's final note. When she finally picked it up, his salutation startled her. "Dearest Maddie, today is supposed to be your final day at the inn. I know you have a book to finish, and I know your deadline is tight, but could I bring lunch at noon and steal a few minutes of your time? There's something I'd like to talk to you about. If you can't spare the time, I understand. Just leave a message on my cell phone. Happy writing. Art." She turned the note over, hoping to find a postscript that would offer a clue. But the page was blank. How did he expect her to concentrate, knowing he'd be walking through the door in a few hours? She went into the bathroom off the main floor bedroom and inspected her reflection. Why hadn't she bothered to fix her hair this morning, instead of gathering it into a sloppy ponytail, and chosen something besides yoga pants and sweatshirt? Although she did like the way the teal color brought out the green flecks in her eyes, what difference did it make what she wore, how she looked? It didn't matter. None of it mattered. She barely managed to write 1,000 words before the clock struck 12. Right on schedule, she heard the key in the door to the apartment below. She moistened her lips, quickly saved her file, and put her computer in sleep mode. Footsteps sounded on the stairway, and Maddie went to meet him. Art balanced 2 round plastic containers in his hands and was attempting to secure 2 large paper cups with his chin while the cat wove a figure eight between his feet. She hurried down the steps. "Here, let me take some of this. Alex, shoo." Smells good. What are we having?" "Chicken noodle soup." Art grinned and winked at her. "I'm told it's good for what ails you." Why did he always have to flirt with her? If he didn't have room in his heart for another woman, why did he turn on the charm when he was with her? She took the soup into the kitchen and transferred it to thick pottery bowls. Enticing aromas filled the room. "Is this from the deli?" she called out to the dining room where she heard him scooting chairs around. The drinks bore the deli's label, but their takeout usually came in styrofoam containers. He came and stood in the doorway between the 2 rooms and watched while she fixed a tray with crackers and spoons. "The drinks are from the deli. Actually, Ginny made the soup."
"Really?"
That was interesting. Ginny'd been over the night before to borrow the newspaper. She hadn't mentioned anything about soup. Maddie swept past Art, carrying the tray to the table. Art put folded napkins at each place and removed lids from their drinks. He came and held her chair for her.
"Thank you, sir."
He took the chair to her left and spread a napkin on his lap. "Shall we bless the food?" Maddie nodded and bowed her head. Art surprised her by reaching for her hand. His grasp was warm and firm, and unsettling. "Father God, we thank you for this day and for this food. Please bless our time together, and especially bless the dear hands that prepared this food. In Jesus' name, amen." He squeezed Maddie's hand before he let it go. They ate in silence for a few minutes. Then Art wiped his mouth and pushed back from the table. "I want to talk to you about something." She swallowed a mouthful of soup and put down her spoon.
"So you said, in your note."
Art bent his head and rubbed circles in the smooth finish of the table with his fingertips.
I owe you an apology. You took me by surprise that day I first realized who you were. Before I'd had time to think about the consequences, I'd already asked you for a date. That wasn't fair to you. Maddie's defenses went up. Here it came. The big breakup scene that was all too familiar. Never fear, though. She had her lines memorized. Meanwhile, Art dutifully delivered his own lines. The truth is, I was a very confused man. I wasn't looking for another relationship because, well, I guess I'd known true love, and I didn't believe I could ever find that with anyone else. From the edge of her consciousness, Maddie became aware that Art was speaking in the past tense. She started to pay attention. For a while, grief crippled me, he said. But I've been talking to some very wise counselors recently, and I do believe they've brought me to my senses. Counselors? She waited. With one easy motion, he straddled his chair and moved it closer to hers. He enveloped her right hand in both of his. Maddie, I don't want to rush you, but I don't want to let you get away either. When you told me your house was finished, and that you wouldn't be coming out here to write anymore, he shook his head and swallowed hard. It scared me. I know it sounds crazy because it's not like we were ever here together, but I liked coming home to find your notes. Highlight of my days, and I'll miss them like crazy. I liked walking up the stairs and catching the faintest whiff of your perfume. And that day I was homesick? Oh, Maddie, you can't imagine how wonderful it was to hear your laughter up here. I don't want to lose that. Though her backside was firmly planted on the brocade pad of the chair, Maddie felt some part of her rise up and begin to soar. Alex sauntered to the table, tail held high, and situated himself between them. The cat looked from Maddie to Art and back again, then pushed his weight hard against Maddie's leg, begging to be petted. Go away, Alex. Art gave the cat a gentle shove with the side of his foot. Come on, buddy, you're cramping my style. Alex plopped down on top of Maddie's feet. Art ignored him and scooted his chair another inch closer. What I'm trying to say is, I know now it's very possible I may find love again, and I'm ready to embrace the possibility. She sat, speechless. One hot tear escaped and rolled down her cheek. Art let go of her hand. He reached up to thread his fingers through her hair and smudged the tear away with his thumb. Oh, Maddie, I'm so sorry if I hurt you. Could we begin again? She nodded, her heart as full as her throat. Art stroked her hair away from her temple and looked into her eyes. I desperately want to kiss you right now. Would that be okay? In an instant she was in his arms, and then he was kissing her forehead, her temples, his lips brushing away the tears of joy that streaked her cheeks. Finally, gently, he matched his lips to hers. When he drew away, they were both breathless. Wow. Maddie drew out the word. Yeah. Wow, he echoed, kissing her again. He brushed a strand of hair from her face, then cupped her cheek in the palm of his hand. I have so much I want to tell you. God has done some pretty incredible things in my life these past few days. Really? He nodded. You may be the writer, but I have some stories of my own to tell. She reached up and put her hand over his, savoring the warmth of his skin. I can't wait to hear your stories, Arthur Tyler. That familiar spark flared in his smoky eyes. What if I told you that you were the heroine in some of them? She flashed him a grin. I'd say turnabout is fair play. Their mingled laughter rang through the house. Chapter 15. Art tamped the snow shovel on the driveway and stepped back to admire his work. The walk was clear, but the porch railings wore pristine shawls of snow that sparkled in the late January sun. Maddie had allowed him to shovel the walk only for the sake of the guests, who'd be arriving within the hour. But she'd been adamant about leaving the snow on the railings intact. If he remembered correctly, picturesque was the word she'd used. And he had to admit, the inn did look nice after the skies had deposited 8 inches of the white stuff on its roof and eaves. With her manuscript barely turned in on time, he'd expected her to be frantic about the wedding plans and logistics of their friends and family who were coming in for the event. But if Art had learned anything about Madeline Hauser, soon to be Maddie Tyler, it was that she didn't let many things rattle her. God has it all under control, she'd told him, before they kissed goodnight on the inn's front porch last night. The last night they'd spend apart. Ever, if he had anything to say about it. He could hardly make it seem real that today was his wedding day. He'd been afraid thoughts of Annie, and a twinge of guilt, might dampen his joy. But he was surprised to discover that although Annie, and the wedding day he'd shared with her, were very much on his mind, he was flooded with peace in the midst of it all. Thank you, Lord. Maddie's sister, Kate, had come earlier in the week and quickly assumed the bossy big sister role. His instructions were to stay out of their way and do whatever Maddie told him in preparation for the wedding. When Art told Pastor Rennick that, the man had nodded knowingly.
Sounds like everything is under control, then.
Now the inn was ready, inside and out, and he went to get the car. His final duty before donning a tux and assuming his position in front of the fireplace was to pick up Maddie's mom from the nursing home. He and Maddie had taken her out for a drive in the country a couple of weeks ago, and he'd practiced, with Maddie's help, transferring Mildred Hauser from the wheelchair to the car, folding the chair and stowing it in the trunk, then doing it all in reverse. Half an hour later, with Mrs. Hauser seated at the back beside Ginny near the aisle Maddie would walk down, he ran down to his apartment to get dressed. He hadn't seen Alex since breakfast, but no doubt the cat was hiding out from the strangers who'd been coming and going all week, getting things ready for the wedding. Knotting the silver tie Maddie picked out for him, he heard Jed and Kate and the girls upstairs greeting guests. Chairs scraped on the floor overhead, and a pleasant murmur of mingled voices floated down to him. He adjusted his cufflinks and checked his watch. Almost time. His nerves ratcheted up a notch. He gave his tie a final tug, slipped into his jacket, and headed upstairs. Six rows of rented chairs had been arranged facing the fireplace, and from the back of the room he observed the small gathering of friends and family unnoticed. He was surprised how many had come out on a Saturday. Three fellow professors and their wives visited in hushed voices on the back row, and a knot of friends from church held down the fort on the other side of the aisle. Dave Sanders, who'd agreed to stand up with him, caught his eye and came to clap him on the shoulder and shake his hand. "Hey, buddy, you ready for this?" "I'm ready." Pastor Rennick went to the front, and Dave joined him while Art went to get Maddie's mom. In the corner of the dining room, a string quartet from the college tuned their instruments. The exquisite dissonance seemed a perfect metaphor for this new beginning. The room quieted in anticipation. Art bent to kiss Ginny's cheek, and the lump that moved into his throat surprised him. "Break a leg," she said, with a comical pump of her fist, chuckling and feeling instantly more at ease. Art patted Mildred Hauser's hand and wheeled her to the spot reserved on the aisle at the front row. He kissed her cheek, as he had Ginny's, and took his place at the front of the room beside Dave. Kate came from a side door and joined them on the other side of the fireplace, as the opening strains of Purcell's trumpet tune swelled and overflowed the inn. Ginny rose from her chair and went to stand at the bottom of the stairs. That was the cue for all to rise and face the staircase. The banister was festooned with ivy and baby's breath, and candles glowed from hurricanes tied to each baluster post. The inn had never looked better. Annie would have been delighted. Art somehow knew that, knew it as surely as his love for Maddie Hauser grew with every moment he spent with her. He turned toward the staircase. This was it, and he'd never been more ready in his life. Maddie stood at the top of the stairway looking down, her heart and nerves aflutter. "Please don't let me fall." As soon as that prayer left her heart, another took wing behind it, a simple prayer she welcomed and hoped would never leave her repertoire. "Thank you, God," she whispered, "for everything." The string quartets echoed strains of Purcell's lovely air, wafted up the stairs, giving the moment a surreal quality. Maddie took a deep breath and gripped her elegant bouquet of white roses in one hand. She caught her reflection in the ornate mirror on the landing, and for once, she was pleased with what she saw there. She'd planned to wear a cream-colored suit she'd owned for years, but Kate had found this simple tea-length gown on clearance in a Cincinnati boutique, and frantically texted photos to Maddie mere days before she'd flown in for the wedding. The dress was perfect. Absolutely perfect. The fitted strapless gown had a bodice of appliqué lace and a matching sheer shrug. The satin skirt had just the right amount of flounce and showed off her satin and lace slippers. Kate had helped her with her hair, pulling up the sides but leaving the back down the way Art liked it. Her sister had tried to talk her into a frothy veil, but Maddie hated it the instant Kate popped it on her head. They'd settled instead on a fragile wreath of baby's breath tucked at her crown. Maddie descended the first step. Seeing Ginny waiting for her there, her heart swelled. How dear this woman was to her. She blinked back tears and prayed she wouldn't ruin her mascara. The slanted ceiling prevented her from seeing more than Art's feet until she was halfway down, but when his eyes came into view, all she saw there was love. She reached the bottom step and took Ginny's arm, but she only had eyes for this man, this amazing man. She couldn't help the smile that came. Nothing had ever felt so right, so true. When she reached her mother's wheelchair, she knelt beside it and whispered, "I love you, Mom." Maddie kissed her cheek and stood quickly before the tears came again. Taking Ginny's hand, she squeezed it and stepped up to the altar.
Ginny still beside her. Pastor Rennick greeted the audience and said pleasant words that Maddie barely heard. But when he asked, "Who gives this woman to be married to this man?" Ginny lifted her chin and answered strong and clear, "Her mother and I." The guests sighed in unison, obviously moved by the moment. Maddie hugged Ginny and waited for her to find her seat beside Mom. Then she turned to her groom. Art took her hand in his, squeezing her fingers, stroking her palm with his smooth thumb in a silent language meant only for them. "You look so beautiful," he mouthed when they'd turned their backs to their guests. Pastor Rennick let them have a moment, and then he spoke the timeless vows. "Arthur Tyler, do you take this woman? And Madeline Hauser, do you take this man?" "Yes. Oh, yes, I do." She repeated the promises, committing to memory the planes of her beloved's face, the glint in his eyes. "I promise to love and cherish you, in sickness and in health, for richer or for poorer, and forsaking all others, as long as we both shall live." They exchanged rings, and the pastor smiled as he addressed them before the congregation. "Therefore, by the power vested in me, I now pronounce you husband and wife. You may kiss your..." Meow. Muffled gasps rose from the audience, and Dave Sanders' children laughed out loud. In unison, Art and Maddie looked down to see Alex winding figure eights between their legs, tail fluffed and held high. Maddie stifled a giggle. Art winked at her and reached to scoop up the cat with one arm. He placed Alex ceremoniously in the surprised pastor's arms. Then he turned and took Maddie into his arms and kissed her long and sweet. The guests rose, clapping and cheering, and the string quartet burst into a joyous rendition of Mendelssohn's Wedding March. Art slid his hand down her arm and grasped her hand again, entwining her fingers with his. Together, they turned to face their loved ones for the first time as husband and wife. Maddie practically floated down the aisle beside him. A new year, a new life, a new beginning. Discussion questions. Number 1. Do you think it is possible to fall in love with someone you've never met except through letters? What are some of the dangers of courting only through letters or email? Some of the advantages. Number 2. Art and Maddie have very different backgrounds. He is a small-town boy. She is a city girl. He likes classic literature. She's a romance writer. What kind of problems might those differences create after Art and Maddie are married? Number 3. If you are married, do you and your spouse have more in common or more differences? How do commonalities and differences each add something positive to a marriage? Number 4. Ginny actively played matchmaker to Art and Maddie. Do you know anyone who fancies themselves to be a matchmaker? What are the pitfalls of playing matchmaker? Have you ever known it to work successfully? To be a disaster? Share your stories. Number 5. God had to heal places in both Art's and Maddie's hearts before they could be ready to love one another. Have you experienced something similar in a relationship? Number 6. If you are married, how did God prepare you to have the capacity to love your spouse? Do you think God sometimes asks spouses, even if they are long married, to undergo change for the other's sake? An excerpt from A February Bride by Betsy St. Amant. Prologue. Allie Andrews couldn't breathe, and it had nothing to do with the yards of tulle wrapped around her waist, or the fact that the air conditioner in the crowded, small-town southern church was on the fritz again, resulting in the sporadic waving of wedding programs in front of flushed faces she'd seen when she peeked through the sanctuary window 10 minutes earlier. No, her lack of breath had everything to do with the ticking clock, the literal one on the wall, and the figurative one thumping an unsteady rhythm in her heart. Married. A bead of sweat trickled between her shoulder blades, sure to dampen the silky ivory fabric that cascaded down her back like a white chocolate waterfall gone wrong. So wrong. Married. She twisted the stem of her rose bouquet and paced the faded orange carpet inside the bride's room, her thoughts churning along with her breakfast. She slipped one heel out of her 3-inch pump, anxiety tying her stomach into a knot that would make a Boy Scout proud. Married! It wouldn't take much to toe off one shoe, then the other, dig her painstakingly pedicured feet into the carpet for traction, grab the hem of this cursed dress, and just bolt. Better now than later, right? Marcus. She couldn't do that to Marcus. But wasn't marrying him doing him worse? She strode to the window overlooking the gravel parking lot and stared at the onslaught of cars baking in the late September sun. It was a good turnout. Looked as if half of Bow Creek had shown up. There were probably loads of gifts on the covered table in the reception hall by now. A forever sentimental collection of floral-patterned china she'd rarely use, gift cards to home repair stores,
and likely more than one toaster and blender, all gifts she'd have to return if she let her toes touch the carpet. But would dividing them up in a divorce property settlement however many years down the road be any easier? She started to turn away, then squinted at her reflection, seeing skin at her shoulder where there should be lace. Oh, no. Yes. She twisted for a better view. A tiny tear, right on the seam of the sleeve. Her heart stammered. Not a sign. Just a rip. It happens. Right? She pushed away from the window, wringing her bouquet. Now what? She wished Hannah, her maid of honor and only attendant, was still with her. But she had taken the flower girl for one last trip to the bathroom. Besides, Hannah, while her best friend, was also Marcus's sister. The loyalty line would be blurred if she knew Allie's doubts, and Allie couldn't do that to either of them. She had to figure this one out alone. Married. She swallowed hard and pressed one hand against her stomach. Just pre-wedding jitters, right? That's all it was, surely. She loved Marcus. Maybe too much. The organ reached a crescendo, the opening strains building in strength and cueing her grandmother and her mom down the aisle. Soon it would be time for Hannah, followed by the flower girl, Marcus's little cousin. The little curly-haired blonde would toss more red roses onto that awful carpet that they'd attempted to hide with a lacy runner, and then it'd be Allie's turn, for better or for worse. She hated roses. What was she doing here? The flowers, the carpet, the dress? It was all wrong. None of it went together. It wasn't her. No, it was her mom, her grandmother, her aunt. Not exactly the role models on which to base a marriage. That poison was in her blood, and she couldn't escape it. Just as she hadn't been able to avoid this dress all the women in her family had worn in generations past, or been able to choose her own wedding venue, or floral arrangements, or even the topper on the cake, which, ironically, featured a groom dashing away from a wide-eyed bride clutching the back of his tuxedo collar. Marcus didn't have a chance, and it was all her fault. The music faded into a key change, and then struck up a slightly off-tune version of the wedding march. The unmistakable squeaking of bodies rising from time-warped pews filtered through the space leading from the bride's room to the main entrance of the country chapel, sounding suspiciously like the creaking of gallows. And her poor groom didn't have a clue of the noose dangling above him in the form of a white gold wedding band. Allie towed off her shoes, hitched up her skirt, and dug her toes into the carpet.
You've been listening to the audio production of A January Bride, text copyright 2014 by Deborah Rainey. Production copyright 2013 by Zondervan. No portion of this recording may be reproduced without the prior written consent of Zondervan. For more information on other fine books and audio products from Zondervan, please visit your favorite retailer or visit us online at zondervan.com. A January Bride was produced by Mark Eric and recorded at Empirical Studios in Austin, Texas.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.